Take You Home by LQ Train Tracks. Chapter 1. Harry winces as the lights flash over his face. What was already angry music gets angrier while the crowd shouts its approval. He can't believe anyone wants to dance to this shit. Post-war, the Weird Sisters have become increasingly more aggressive, their lyrics dripping bitterness that everyone who survived Voldemort, only to be faced with insidious bureaucratic obstacles after the fact, seems to taste in the back of their collective throats, Harry included. He supposes it makes sense to dance to it, to throw one's body into the rhythm of it to avoid hurtling oneself into an illegal potions habit, like Finch Fletchley, or off the cliffs of Penwith, like poor Lavender Brown. This is, objectively, a better choice. Less destructive, if much louder. Harry drinks down his third fiendfire shot, grimacing at the way it snakes down his throat, but then humming with pleasure when it meets his stomach and warms him all over. He's wiping his mouth on the back of his hand, thinking it's about time he weaves his way back to his flat before he gets another howler from Ron and Hermione about his bad habits. And that's when he sees him. Draco Malfoy writhes on the dance floor like a wisp of smoke, his undulating body caught in sharp flashes that bisect his fluid movements, shining light on his face one moment, his eyes closed in something that looks like ecstasy, leaving him in the dark the next. Harry blinks, his reaction slowed from the alcohol. If he had his wits about him, he'd have looked away in time. But the next moment, the light strikes Malfoy's eyes. He opens them, and his gaze spears through Harry. He feels it like a hand reaching into his chest cavity, squeezing the life out of his heart. He doesn't mean to stare as Malfoy's body moves slowly to the grinding guitar. It's Malfoy's eyes that hold him in place, his look at first almost gentle, like the fact that it's Harry he's looking at hasn't quite registered. He sways, soft curls having slipped free from the bun he's got perched high on the back of his head. The white blonde tendrils caress his cheekbones, his jaw, and Harry thinks that someone who'd been so hateful shouldn't get to be beautiful. He must be frowning, because now Malfoy mirrors the expression, and all of that soft sensuousness carves itself back into angular disdain. His dancing stops. Harry looks away, as though caught at something. He gets up off the barstool, but Malfoy comes over quickly, body pinging off the other dancers like a pinball, and he manages to block Harry before he makes for the door. "What are you looking at, Potter?" The words are thick, hurled with carefully enunciated venom, and Harry realizes Malfoy is very, very drunk. He's had much more to drink than Harry has, and it's a minor miracle he's standing on his own two feet, much less able to dance. "Nothing," Harry says, wanting only to be home now. Coming out was a mistake. It's always a mistake. And apparently this was the exact wrong thing to say, because Malfoy sneers at him. "That's right, isn't it, Potter? I'm nothing. I'm shit on the bottom of your fucking shoe, just like old times." "That's not... fuck you, you has-been, dried-up media darling. They don't want you anymore, do they? They don't want any of us. You're down here with the scum, Potter." He sways with the force of his words, poking Harry in the chest and stumbling backward when Harry doesn't budge. But when Harry reaches out to steady him, it's only reflex, it's not kindness. Draco shoves his arm and then takes a swing at Harry's face, which Harry easily dodges. This only makes Malfoy angrier, and he tries again. When Harry ducks the second punch, cursing, "Bloody hell, you dick!" Malfoy whirls in a half circle, his eyes roll shut, and he passes out, cold. Harry, being the closest person to him and, again, acting on reflex, scoops Malfoy's body from its dead faint, adopting an absurd bridal carry, with Malfoy slumped unconscious against his chest. Merlin's balls, what a fucked up night. Harry looks around himself, bewildered. "Was he here with anyone?" he shouts, hoping he can pawn Malfoy off on Parkinson or Zabini or Goyle or whoever the fuck it is he hangs around with these days. But no one comes to Harry's aid, or Malfoy's rescue. Likely no one hears him over the pounding of drums and the screaming of lyrics.
"Oi!"
comes a shout from behind him, and Harry turns, relieved, only to be confronted with a very weary-looking barkeep.
"He comes in most Fridays, alone," the man says, crushing Harry's hopes.
Harry hikes Malfoy up a little higher against his body. "Do you happen to know where he lives?"
"I'm not a bloody social worker," the barman says, and then moves off to pull a pint.
One last look around the room confirms that no one seems to give two shits that Malfoy fainted in his arms.
"Fuck,"
Harry sighs, and begins making his way to the door, trying to keep Malfoy's head nestled against his own chest so he doesn't go lolling backward into the crowd to get concussed by an enthusiastic elbow. Malfoy makes a decent shield, actually, and they make it out into the temperate late spring night without incident. Or without further incident, would be more accurate. Harry breathes deeply of the fresh air, looks right and left down the pavement, and then sets off to the nearest apparition point, which sits on the edge between this small pocket of Wixen shops and bars and a sketchy East London muggle neighborhood with more broken street lamps than working ones, the perfect place to hide the crackling magic of a disappearing wizard and his unconscious enemy. Harry's steps are quick and purposeful. He'd rather set Malfoy down sooner rather than later, but he doesn't trust himself with a side along without an apparition point. Not when he's had as many drinks as he has. And though Malfoy was lithe and graceful on the dance floor, he's like a sack of wet grindylows passed out like this, and seems to have gained a couple of stone while unconscious. Not to mention it's awkward in other ways. What if Malfoy wakes up, feels Harry carrying him, and decides to fight him anew? What if he voms all over Harry's nice new t-shirt? But as hastily as Harry makes his way to his destination, which is in the shady alley next to a closed muggle dry cleaner called Slappy's Happy Clothes, with a properly horrible clown face on the swinging sign, the sooner he realizes, he doesn't know where to apparate to. Or he does, but he simply doesn't want to. He can't show up to Ron and Hermione's with a stinking drunk Malfoy. They'd kill Harry if he wakes the baby. He's not setting foot near the manor ever again. Not that he's even sure any Malfoy still live there anyway. And, as has been established, he has no idea who Malfoy cavorts with anymore. Clearly there's no one he wants coming with him on nights out like this, which would be sad, probably, if Harry thought about it too much. He considers dropping him off at one of the many homeless shelters that popped up after the war, for people who'd lost everything, or everyone. He knows of a few nearby, but... He looks down at Malfoy's still face, his long lashes lying peacefully against the razor sharpness of his cheeks. He could take him to Mungo's, maybe try to get him dried out. Perhaps he has a problem, after all. Malfoy makes a muffled noise against Harry's body, but otherwise shows no signs of returning to consciousness. All Harry can think about is how heavy Malfoy is and how good his own bed is going to feel. Maybe it wouldn't be the worst decision Harry's ever made, to take Draco Malfoy home. "Fuck," Harry says again. He looks this way and that, determining that they're as alone as they're going to get. Then he apparates. Malfoy smells like spilled beer and not quite dried sweat, but there's no way Harry's going to try to get him into the shower. Once they land on the doorstep, and Harry maneuvers him into the small building, inside which is his studio flat, one of eight, it seems the best option is to just deposit him on the nearest piece of furniture and let him sleep it off. Pushing into his own place, he murmurs a wandless Lumos, which hovers in the far corner of the living room and lights the way for Harry to lay Malfoy on the sofa. Malfoy makes a slurred sound of protest, but sinks dutifully into the cushions once he's out of Harry's arms. Harry sighs, hands on his hips a moment, and then goes to fetch a blanket from the hallway cupboard, realizing on the way there that Malfoy will wake with an ungodly thirst. He slings the blanket over his shoulder on the way to the kitchen. Once he sets a full glass plus a pitcher of water on the coffee table and tosses the blanket at Malfoy's feet, he turns back to the kitchen to go grab a pot. He puts his oldest and ugliest soup pot, the one with the broken handle, on the floor next to Malfoy's head.
Then he summons a bottle of sober up for good measure, and sets that where Malfoy will see it easily if he wakes. Harry shakes out the blanket and lays it over him. He hesitates, biting his lip. Fatigue grabs him like gravity, and he sits on the edge of the coffee table, observing Malfoy in his sleep.
"What would have happened to you," Harry asks softly, "if I hadn't been there?"
He shudders to think. The clientele didn't seem the type to lend a helping hand. Or maybe he's not giving them enough credit. Maybe someone would have found him, picked him up, splashed water on his face, asked his name, his address. Or maybe Malfoy would have ended up drowning in his own puke right there, under 100 pounding feet and the sickening wheel of strobe lights. Malfoy's curled on his side now under the blanket, his fists up under his chin.
"You stupid shit," Harry tells him.
But as he watches Malfoy's breath leave his lips, Harry's only thinking about those howlers, about his own friends begging him to come back to life, and himself wondering what life they could possibly mean. Harry scoots the bucket closer under Malfoy's face. He gets up and goes to bed. In the morning, there's no sign of him. Harry hardly slept, wondering if Malfoy would be there when he woke up. He forced himself to stay in bed rather than go out and check every 15 minutes. Eventually, Harry had fallen asleep, too exhausted to be kept up by his roving thoughts about Malfoy. And now, there's an empty, clean pot right where Harry left it, and a kicked-away blanket, and that's it. The potion is gone, leaving Harry to assume he drank it. He must have used the flu, because Harry's front door is locked from the inside, with all his wards still up. Harry hopes he made it home okay. And then he remembers Malfoy taking 2 swings at him last night, and shoves any and all compassion aside. The work week goes by, with Harry showing up on time to quality Quidditch on Monday and minding the shop for his 6-hour shift. 46 boxes arrive that day, so a lot of his time is spent in receiving, inventorying the stuff, putting the merchandise on the shelves or in backstock. He sells 2 brooms that day and 1 quaffle. Chandra comes in at 11, and Harry takes his lunch, walking down to the Leaky and ordering a cheese pasty and chips. Hermione tells him he needs to start eating healthier. He has salads every Tuesday and Thursday, so he's not sure what the problem is, other than that he's not doing what she wants. After lunch, he comes back and works until 2 p.m., sweeping the shop and the back before he leaves for the day. A little girl shopping for a new bludger bat gawks at him as he works his broom under a shelf to get the dust bunnies hiding out there. And usually he ignores it, the staring. But this time he turns to her and gives a little wink, with his right eye, the one with the scar. She gasps, and he goes back to sweeping. "Have a good one, Chandra," he calls on his way out. She'll be joined by Doug at 3 p.m., and then Doug will close the shop at 9 and stay after to do the bookkeeping until 10. On Tuesdays and Thursdays, it won't be Chandra, but Levi. Doug, who owns the shop, always closes, except on Sundays when it's Leanne, so that Doug gets 1 night a week to have an evening with his partner, Fritz, who Harry rarely sees. Harry is off on Wednesdays, Saturdays, and Sundays. He forgets who else works when he doesn't. Off and on throughout the week, he finds himself thinking about what Malfoy had said. "They don't want you anymore, do they?" As Harry wanders the shops and buys his groceries, peruses the new books at Flourish, as he gets a pint of mint chocolate chip at Fortescue's on his way home, he feels eyes on him, but it's not like before, like that first year after the war. It's been 3 years now, and the flash of cameras has dwindled as well. Fewer and fewer stories run about him in the paps. It was a relief at first, and now it's normal. He's normal. Too normal, or too boring, to pay attention to. Not boring enough for Ron and Hermione, who did all the things people expected of them. Year-long engagement, garden wedding, new baby. He looks at them sometimes, and it's as though he's peering out of a fishbowl, a thick wall of glass between them, and water distorting the view, like they're breathing different air. Friday comes, and after work Harry does his shopping for his weekend meals. He goes to the Muggle gym, powers through his workout, showers. He gets Chinese takeaway on his way home and eats it messily in front of the telly, checking the time every 3 or 4 bites, though he's unsure what he's checking it for. His night is his own. His weekend is too. There's nowhere he has to be. But food put away, dishes done, action film on, he finds himself itchy, almost. Anxious, maybe. He checks his watch again. 11:15. He sighs, flicks off the telly, puts his trainers back on his feet, and leaves the flat. He's not doing it because of Malfoy. Harry goes out on Friday nights pretty often. It's not unusual. He's no stranger to a Saturday morning hangover. The press used to love it. Drunken savior meets parking meter with face, adds matching scar over left eye. That might have been his favorite headline, however inaccurate. His faceplant into the parking meter didn't result in a scar at all. Merlin blessed, didn't he, and Luna's quick thinking. But do that sort of thing often enough, and the world loses interest. He's not fucked up enough to sell papers anymore, and he's not doing well enough either. He's somewhere in the middle, living a very middle-ish life, which is apparently the worst thing he could be doing. It's not that he's hoping to see Malfoy again. It's just that if Malfoy is in the bar, it'll be more interesting than if he isn't. The band tonight is no one Harry knows, and they're less angry than they are terrible. But Harry doesn't mind it. He goes to the bar, starts with a pint, and he listens to the singer try to hit a high note and fail, and it's sort of soothing in a ridiculous way. Harry appreciates the imperfection. His pint's not even halfway down when he spots him, which comes as a strange sort of shock, as though Harry had considered it a long shot, despite being told by the barman that Malfoy's in here nearly every Friday. He really doesn't think there's ever been a time when seeing Malfoy didn't send a frisson of electricity through his body. Not at Hogwarts, not during the war, not through the trials afterward, not ever. But it's a new and altogether unpleasant jolt that this time Malfoy's not dancing alone. He's abandoned the bun, and his long hair flows just past his shoulders, shining under the pink lights. He's in a black, sleeveless T-shirt that, once the light falls on it, Harry notices is see-through. His trousers are magenta and... Merlin, is that dragon hide? All of those details merge with the fact that Malfoy's long, thin arms are draped over another man's strong shoulders, and Harry's entire body goes hot, then ice cold, then hot again, like he's caught something, like he's ill. He's sick with what he's seeing, and he couldn't for the life of him explain why. He leaves his unfinished pint on the bar, unable to tear his gaze off Malfoy and how he moves with his dance partner, slow and flirtatious. As Harry maneuvers between bodies, Malfoy laughs at something the man has whispered in his ear. Harry's hands make fists. Malfoy pauses the dance, but only to reach down to a table they're swaying near, picking up a shot glass from a line of them and downing the clear contents. Then he flicks the glass up, snaps his fingers to vanish it, and steps in close to the man's body, tilting his head. "Malfoy!" Harry barks, stopping the kiss before it starts, and Malfoy's head whips around, his wide eyes finding Harry standing there like a dolt, fists clenched, rigid and inexplicably angry while people dance all around. Malfoy's pale cheeks bloom a color beyond pink, but not quite scarlet. Yet his words don't match this response. "Well, well," he says, "if it isn't Saint Potter." He places his hand on the other man's chest when he attempts to lean back in. Malfoy picks up another full shot glass. "I'm going to need a drink, or 10, for this." He downs it and then says, "Be a dear, will you, and go fetch my jacket. I'm not fond of this establishment's patrons, after all." The dance partner pushes past Harry with a frown and a growl, which leaves Malfoy glaring at him as though Harry's done something unforgivable. "You're welcome, by the way," Harry shouts. Malfoy huffs a laugh that sounds like the preface to an insult. "I'm supposed to thank you." His eyes have gone wide with incredulity. He places his limp hand on his chest. "Oh, where have my manners got off to? Of course I'm grateful to the Savior for letting me exchange a blowjob for a night on his sofa.
What a selfless hero you are.
Exchange what? Harry shakes his head, trying to get the words rolling around in it to make some sense. He feels drunk off half a pint, confused and off balance. Malfoy turns cold, blisteringly so.
Don't insult me by playing stupid. I know you remember more than I do about that night, Potter. Was I good? Was I on my knees for it? Or did you just straddle my face and start fucking? My memory's a little fuzzy, and all I recall is the bad taste you left in my mouth.
What? Harry's heart is like a cannon going off in his chest. We didn't. I wouldn't. Malfoy, nothing happened. Malfoy blinks, the slightest unease cracking through his fury.
Come off it, Potter.
I'm not on it, Harry shouts. How could you think? Malfoy, I didn't fuck you. I wouldn't have let you suck me off for all the money in England, you miserable twat.
It's as though he slapped him then. Malfoy jolts back, too surprised to be enraged for the moment. And then Harry watches as all that anger floods back in, and Malfoy's jaw clenches, his cold eyes sparking with heat. He takes a menacing step toward Harry, into his personal space, and Harry holds his ground. Malfoy's sweet vodka exhale bathes his face when he hisses,
"You too good to stick it to a Death Eater."
His gaze takes in Harry's body, comes back up.
"You afraid I'd bite it off?
Or is it just that you're a frigid closet case who holds his breath while he gives it to his girlfriend's ginger cunt and then goes home to wank it over a fit Quidditch bloke in an old rag? Aren't you the sad, horny, pathetic one, jerking it to the very man you'll never be?"
The punch is pointed, for all that it's wild, catching Malfoy on the jaw and snapping not just his head but his whole body to the right. Malfoy rubs his face, gives a little laugh as he stands straight again. He's bitten his own lip, and now he licks at the blood, which is properly distracting enough that Harry doesn't see the wand in his other hand until it's hexing him.
"Son of a—"
Harry grips his side where Malfoy's magic sizzles like a fresh burn. Malfoy shoves him then, and Harry staggers back.
"Say it. Finish it. Call my mother a bitch and just hand me an excuse to crucio you, you fuck."
One more shove and Harry's had it, taking Malfoy by the flimsy, see-through shirt, making fists in it, and running Malfoy backward until he hits the wall. Dimly, he's aware that some of the other customers have noticed and seem pleased by the ruckus. But the band plays on in the background, and no one's stopping them, and Harry's glad. It feels sickeningly good to have someone to fight, and Malfoy's bloody asking for it.
"That's it," Malfoy says, pleased, his lip dripping blood down his chin now. "I told you," he pants out. "I told you you were down in the muck. It feels good, doesn't it, Potter?"
This close, he can feel Malfoy's breath on his face and neck, can see the stormy flecks of silver in his gray eyes, can smell the heat coming off his body. He presses Malfoy against the wall harder. He wants to pull his wand so badly, wants to slap the slick, blood-smeared smile from Malfoy's face. His knuckles dig into Malfoy's chest, and Harry wants. He moves to pin Malfoy there with his own body, harder. Malfoy gasps, and in the next moment, his eyes light up.
"Oh, it does feel good then," he says, pushing into the grind of Harry's thigh,
and Harry realizes he's almost fully erect against Malfoy's hip. Malfoy sparkles with told-you-so malice. His tongue flicks out and tastes his own blood, and before Harry can think, the last thing he wants to do is think, he launches forward and takes Malfoy's salty lips beneath his own. The first thing that registers is that it tastes good. Malfoy's blood is hot, like metal, his tongue sharp with remembered vodka, his teeth clamping down on Harry's bottom lip. Harry pins him tighter and licks into his open mouth, sealing them together. One of Malfoy's hands goes to his hair and pulls, even as he groans and kisses Harry back, his other hand palming Harry's arse and hauling him closer by it. And it feels fucking brilliant. Malfoy's mouth, his hands, his body, his taunts and anger lingering in Harry's mind as the kiss goes violent, so dirty and wrong and perfect.
"Oi!"
comes a growly voice from behind him, a rude tap on his shoulder accompanying it. Harry shoos the hand away, not breaking the kiss. But then the hand's back, and it pulls him off Malfoy hard, and before Harry knows what he's doing, he's throwing another punch, this time sinking his fist into Malfoy's former dance partner's eye.
"Oh, fuck," Malfoy laughs.
The man seems twice Harry's size this close up, but now Harry's wand is in his hand, and the stunner he sends, though weak by his magic standards, puts the man sprawling onto his backside, skidding across the floor and slamming into some bar stools to shouts of, "Hey!" and "What the fuck, man?" He lies there, a surprised look stuck onto his face, as Harry turns back to a glimmering Malfoy.
"You going to fuck me right here, Potter? That will show him."
Harry jerks Malfoy close and apparates. They land in a bathroom stall, the music from out in the club pounding through the walls. Malfoy's on him quickly, pulling him into another rough, biting kiss as Harry works the shirt up Malfoy's stomach. They part for Harry to pull it up his raised arms and off, disheveling his hair. Malfoy comes at the new kiss tongue first, and Harry groans, cupping Malfoy's cock through the leather of his trousers.
"You think I'm going to let you have me in this filthy loo?" Malfoy murmurs against Harry's ear.
Harry grabs his crotch harder, wraps his other arm around Malfoy's waist, and apparates again. The outside air feels good when they crack into the alley, and Harry works Malfoy's trousers open, hands frantic to get at him. He hasn't felt like this in ages. He hasn't felt like this ever. He flips Malfoy's front toward the brick wall, yanks his trousers down. Malfoy isn't wearing any pants, and the knowledge licks fire up Harry's neck. He fumbles with his own flies.
"Knew you wanted it," Malfoy breathes.
He waves a hand in the air, and when Harry goes to rut his naked prick against Malfoy's crack, it's wet and slick. He crowds Malfoy against the wall, thrusts between his arse cheeks, mad with it all.
"You want them to see," Malfoy taunts,
even as he widens his stance as much as his trousers will allow.
"Screw me for the paps, Potter. Let's make headlines."
And the idea that they might be seen, and by the press, was not something he'd considered. As mindless as he is with wanting to fuck, Draco Malfoy, Merlin help him. He growls at the interruption, but hugs Malfoy's body to his own, and, one last time, apparates. He rips Malfoy through his own wards, and they land in his living room, the sudden quiet and privacy letting him hear his own ragged breath, and Malfoy's answering it. Malfoy turns around.
"Fucking hell, you're mental!"
Kicks off his boots, his trousers, and Harry meets his gaze as he strips his own t-shirt off, letting it drop. Then he pushes his jeans down his hips, yanks Malfoy's naked body close, and Malfoy's feet come off the ground. He presses his back to the wall, Malfoy's legs coming around him. It takes a couple of thrusts before he aims true and slides in. And then Malfoy's eyes widen, a warm blush steals down his chest. Harry pushes into his arse, and Malfoy inhales sweetly, and then grips Harry's shoulders, closes his eyes, pants out, "Oh, God." And they're fucking. Harry does it hard, taking him under the thighs and just going in him. Malfoy holds on for dear life, bouncing on his dick, making the most delicious sounds Harry has ever heard, and in between them, riling him up.
"You like that pussy? You're going to come inside it and then make me lick your dick clean."
Harry goes faster, fucking Malfoy speechless, his pretty eyes rolling back. Harry's sweating, straining, every muscle working, his mind on fire, body coiling tighter and tighter, and Malfoy feels so good. Sounds so good.
"Shit, I'm coming,"
Malfoy says, as though surprised by this realization. He gasps twice, mewls in Harry's ear, and then his spunk splashes between them, warm and soft. It drips down Harry's belly, down the line of hair there. He holds Malfoy closer, holds him desperately, hips whipping. He buries a growl against Malfoy's neck and comes inside him, banging both their bodies against the wall. A picture frame drops nearby, the glass shattering. The deep, low laugh from Malfoy's tired body comes out punctuated by Harry's last thrusts. Slowly, he pulls out. Malfoy's legs loosen, and Harry sets him gently on his feet again. He stays there a moment, panting. Then he pulls his jeans up from where they've been around his thighs. Harry tucks his prick, still tingling and sensitive, into his pants, zips himself up, turning away. He's somewhat shell-shocked by what he's done. What he and Malfoy have done together. He wants to say something. Should say something, but he hasn't the faintest clue what. Malfoy clears his throat behind him.
"Have you got a shower, Potter?"
Harry licks his lips, swallows against a throat left dry by his heavy breathing. He glances Malfoy's way.
"Yeah, down the hall, on the left."
"Fabulous," Malfoy says flippantly, then picks up his trousers, boots, and socks, and takes it all with him down the hall. Harry can't help but watch the twitch of his muscles as he walks, the provocative shift from hamstring to buttock, the flinch of dimple. Malfoy disappears into the bathroom, and soon the shower comes on. Harry gets a tall glass of water from the kitchen, downing it, and then refilling the glass. Belatedly, he gets a glass down for Malfoy, too. He thinks about going into the bathroom, maybe getting in the shower with him. But that feels all wrong, too intimate, something a lover would do, and they're not lovers. While he's standing there thinking these things, the shower turns off. His heart rate jumps up, knowing he'll see Malfoy again soon. He doesn't know what he'll do, what he'll say when he does. Malfoy comes out in the trousers, his chest bare because they left his shirt in the loo of the club. His hair's shiny and damp, combed through with his fingers. Harry's struck, once again, and reluctantly, by how beautiful he is. He's about to gesture to the water on the counter when Malfoy flicks his hair back and asks,
"Front door this way."
Harry nods.
"You can use the flue, though, if you want. You did last time."
"Last time," Malfoy says with a soft sneer. Harry sighs.
"Nothing happened. You can't possibly think that I'd..."
He frowns as Malfoy stands there, blushing.
"I'd never take advantage like that."
Malfoy looks at him, all that heat from before transmuted, the sex washed off his body while Harry stands there stinking of it, thrumming with it. Malfoy looks at Harry like they're strangers, but then he says,
"No, you wouldn't, would you?"
As though this is a fault, somehow. Unsure what to say to that, Harry just looks at him from across the kitchen.
"See you around, Potter," Malfoy says, passing him and foregoing the flue, stalking imperiously out the front door and closing it loudly behind him.
Chapter 2.
He starts asking. Going thrifting with Luna, trying to seem nonchalant as he looks through a rack of t-shirts. "Do you know what's up with Malfoy these days?"
"I heard he went to Morocco with his family. They're dealing in black market dark objects there,"
she says, with typically unearned confidence.
"This one, Harry. Purple is definitely your color."
He visits Neville's greenhouses on the pretense that all his plants have died, except that it's not a pretense at all. Harry has absolutely killed them. A homicide of neglect.
"You have any idea where Malfoy's living now?"
Harry asks as he browses some tulips, trying to steer clear of a very handsy tentacula that seems intent on trying to pickpocket him.
"All I know is they sold the manor for peanuts. Not sure where he might be now."
"Hmm," Harry hums, then, "ow," when the tentacula slaps his arse. Having put it off as long as possible, he drops by Ron and Hermione's.
"Why would you think we would know anything?"
Ron says, sounding offended at even the question. Harry's insides squirm around, and he avoids his friend's eyes. If Ron only knew what Harry knows of Malfoy now. The sound he makes when he's being fucked. The heat of his skin under Harry's hands. How tight and good he feels. How vicious his words are, and then how sweet he sighs before he comes.
"Actually,"
Hermione says, emerging from the back with a newly nappied baby,
"you know the firm often sends me as the liaison to the ministry to meet with their solicitors, which means I do a lot of work out of there.
right near Pansy Parkinson's office. And though I haven't been back in 2 months, I heard some things right around the holidays last year, and it seems he's barely scraping by. Lucius disappeared with all the money they got from the estate. His mother's living off Andromeda's kindness, I think. That doesn't leave much for Malfoy. I overheard Parkinson saying that the last time she'd seen him, he'd kept in her guest room for a few nights and then disappeared again.
Does he have a job? Harry asks.
Hermione bounces the baby and then hands her off to Ron, who starts singing under his breath.
I think she said he helps out at a bar. Or bars, rather. Different places. What's weird is, I also heard from Goldstein that he saw Malfoy in coveralls, and he was changing the locks on Anthony's neighbor's flat. She's an old witch and loses her wand a lot. Apparently Malfoy was putting up new wards for her. So maybe he does odd jobs? I don't know. Why are you so curious, Harry?
Ron scoffs.
What do you mean, why is he so curious? He's always been like this about Malfoy.
But, mate, he goes on, turning back to Harry, I'd leave off if I were you. Malfoy's never been any good, and I doubt anything's changed.
She just said he was helping an old lady, Ron.
Ron shrugs, and the baby burps.
There you go, sweetheart, he croons.
Well, anyway,
thanks, Harry says.
He kisses the baby on her head.
Good to see you, Rosie Poo.
Do not call her that,
Hermione reprimands, but with a tired smile tugging at her lips. Maybe very tired. The circles under her eyes are telling. She follows him to the door.
I know you think Ron's overreacting,
she said when they're out of earshot of her husband.
But he has good instincts, and he worries about you. We both do.
Harry leaves her with the obligatory kiss on her cheek, smiling enough to conceal how disheartened he is by the visit, by the last dozen visits. He walks 3 steps down their garden path, with Hermione watching protectively after him as he disapparates. Friday comes once more. This time, it's intentional. Harry gets home from work, showers, picks out his clothes with care. Heather gray t-shirt, tight blue jeans with a rip across the thigh. He apparates a few streets down and walks the rest of the way to exercise some of his jitters. He's unsure if he should be preparing for a fight or a shag, or maybe Malfoy denying the whole thing, or outright ignoring him. Or dead. He could be dead. Harry stands under the blazing white neon sign for the Black Dove, the O in Dove flickering and hissing, ready to die. He takes a deep breath and walks in. Turns out he needn't have worried how it was going to go.
"He's not here tonight," says the bartender, same bloke as the other time.
Harry glances at his name tag.
Sergio. I'm Harry.
I know.
Wearily, again, Sergio pours a double bourbon.
Right, okay. Well, do you have any idea where he might be? Other bars, maybe?
Sergio pushes the drink to his customer, then plants his hands on the bar, looking at Harry like he's trying to decide if he wants to put any more energy into talking to him. Harry swallows.
Try Flint's old place. He'll go there if he needs money.
You don't mean Marcus Flint?
The same,
says Sergio, and Harry's stomach turns. Flint was an even worse arsehole than Malfoy back in the day.
Head up Prince's Street toward the river. Take a left at the church. 2 blocks from there. There's no sign, just a red X on the door.
Sounds lovely.
Good luck.
Sergio's already looking down the bar, giving his new customer a nod, and Harry walks back out the way he came. He's got enough information on the place to apparate, so he pops into an alley across the street and observes a couple entering the bar. They don't look like criminals or anything. The music that floats out as they fling the door open sounds American, maybe blues or jazz. Inside, it's lit softly, lavender and gold reflecting off brass. There's no Flint to be seen, thankfully, and it's a woman tending bar.
What'll it be?
She asks, her burgundy lips turning up. She looks familiar, like someone he met years ago and has changed since then, maybe put on weight or lost it, maybe glamoured herself somehow.
You don't recognize me, do you?
I'm sorry, no.
She smirks at him.
That's okay.
I was a bit different looking the last time we saw one another, which would have been 8th year, advanced potions class, before I got kicked out of Hogwarts for running a gambling ring in the dungeons.
Harry's lips part, but nothing comes out.
No, that would have been... Zabini?
She smiles.
You do remember. I'm touched. Though it's Belinda Zabini now. So I suppose I should say, pleased to meet you.
She holds out her hand, her nails painted the same shade as her lips. Harry takes her hand, breathes an amazed laugh.
Belinda?
Zabini winks.
Are you here for a drink, or for our mutual friend?
Harry's too busy trying not to appear to be staring. Belinda's gauzy blouse fits against her flat, muscular chest in a way that draws the eye pleasantly, but Harry doesn't want to be disrespectful. Still, it takes him a moment to work out exactly what she's said, and in the meantime she's fetched him a glass.
Why not have one while you wait for the other, hmm? You seem like a fire whiskey man to me.
Fire whiskey's great, thanks. Harry waits patiently while she pours, takes a soothing sip, and then says,
I was told this was Marcus Flint's place. Used to be, she says. I bought him out.
She didn't buy him out, comes Malfoy's voice, and Harry whips his head around to see him carrying a case of something in his arms, with two more cases bobbing along behind him on his magic.
He lost it to her in a poker game.
Hush now, Belinda says, but she's smiling. Malfoy's gaze meets Harry's.
Potter,
he says, and sets down his burden behind the bar, which turns out to be bottles of champagne.
Aren't you the man about town?
Don't harass my customers, Draco, Belinda says, and then works her way down the bar, greeting a new patron and then mixing them a cocktail.
Who's harassing? If anyone is doing the harassing, it's Potter, isn't that right?
I'm just having a drink, Harry says. Lies, rather. He did follow Malfoy here. He downs his drink and pushes the glass across the bar top.
I carry kegs and clean things, Malfoy says. She pours.
Go on, Belinda says, putting her customer's galleons in her register and handing them a few knuts. Doubt Potter minds. He is here to see you, after all. Harry's face grows hot at that. Draco's eyebrow goes up. He's in a ponytail tonight, the shiny strands of his hair pulled to the back of his head, right in the center, sort of girlish in a way that makes Harry's body itch and his hands feel empty. He grips his glass.
Aren't you afraid I might try to poison you?
Malfoy asks him, not yet reaching for the bottle of fire whiskey. Harry meets his gaze head on.
I'm not afraid of you.
Malfoy blinks, considers it, then splashes a double into Harry's glass.
Thanks, Harry says. Don't mention it. You owe her 8 sickles.
Malfoy starts to unbox the liquor bottles, putting them away. He's in a plain white vest tonight, and his pale muscles flex when he moves. Harry catches swift glimpses of the hair under his arms, a little darker than the white blonde of his head. When he bends, black denim stretches tight over his arse.
Mind if I take my break now, B?
She flicks the back of her fingers at him, and Malfoy meets Harry's eyes before he pushes out from behind the bar. Harry watches his steps up to a door at the back. Then Malfoy turns, lifts his eyebrows at Harry, and waits. Harry does his best not to scramble off the barstool. He downs the fire whiskey and then follows Malfoy out into the wide alley behind the bar. Malfoy walks down the short stairs. Once Harry joins him, Malfoy takes hold of the belt loops of Harry's jeans and pulls him into the shadows. Harry lets the kissing go on a little too long, because it feels so good he's reluctant to stop. When he does, Malfoy asks, breathily,
What?
Nipping at Harry's jaw, unbuttoning his jeans.
This isn't why I...
Isn't it? Malfoy takes his cock out. He pushes Harry gently, until his back is against the brick wall. Then he goes to his knees, and every protest Harry might have uttered leaves his mind as his head tips back and his mouth opens on a gasp, and Malfoy starts sucking his dick. He bobs on it, Harry looking down on the act like it's some sort of miracle. His hand hovers over Malfoy's head, and then, when Malfoy moans a little, Harry's hand descends and cups the back of his head beneath the ponytail. It doesn't take long. Harry taps Malfoy urgently on the shoulder, leaving small, helpless whimpers on the night air. But
But Malfoy stays, flicks his gaze up and back down. Harry can feel the soft puffs of breath from his nose, and he comes in his mouth with a shaky cry. Out of breath, he sags against the wall, while Malfoy sucks and licks up and down his shaft, humming just a little, or maybe Harry's imagining it. Harry releases his head, wipes his own hair off his forehead as Malfoy stands up, the back of his hand going across his mouth, but not in a way that seems like he's disgusted with what he's done, simply utilitarian. Harry puts his softening cock away, zips and buttons. Malfoy goes and sits on the stairs.
"Want one?"
he asks, offering Harry a cigarette. Harry wanders over, his legs loose and weak like a foal. He shakes his head to the offer and then sits beside Malfoy on the steps while he smokes.
"Those are really bad for you."
A short laugh around his exhale.
"Everything's bad for you."
The words shape the smoke from his lips.
"Those are worse." "Harry, we're wizards. One of us hasn't gotten cancer in, like, 300 years or something."
The name must have landed on Harry's face, because Malfoy rolls his eyes and says,
"Don't read into it,"
and takes another drag. Harry tries not to stare at Malfoy's profile as he balances the cigarette between his lips and redoes his ponytail. A strange thrill of pride skitters over Harry's skin, watching it. He necessitated that.
"My break's nearly over. You sure you don't want this?"
He holds out the cigarette, not even burned halfway down. He's turned it so the filter faces Harry. An offering.
"No, thanks."
"So polite, Potter."
He stubs it out on the concrete step and stands. He's to the door when Harry asks,
"Where will you be next week?"
"Like a loser." God, like a total knob. He sounds hopeful.
When did he begin to hope here?
Maybe at the Dove. Who knows?
"Why? Do you want to see me again?"
Harry swallows, but before he can confirm or deny, Malfoy smiles brilliantly.
"See me in your dreams, Potter."
"You're queer, right?"
Harry looks up from his sweeping and blinks at Chandra across the shop.
"I'm bi," he offers warily,
and it sort of comes out like a question, though there is no question for him. Not anymore. She waves her hand.
"Yeah, bi, queer, that's what I meant."
"Why?" Harry asks, going back to sweeping, though now it's with a strange sort of carefulness, like he might sweep up a landmine.
"There's a protest in 2 weeks, for trans wicks rights."
"You're for trans wicks rights, aren't you?"
The last is asked with such sudden ferocity that Harry almost smiles.
"Yeah, of course," he says.
"You?"
"My brother's trans," she says proudly. "And my best friend in uni, too."
"Cool."
He scoops his little clumps of dust into the bin.
"So?"
Chandra asks.
"Do you want to come?"
"Oh," he says, faltering.
"If you've got a girlfriend or a boyfriend, you can bring them.
Or both," she shouts.
Maybe.
"You maybe have a girlfriend or boyfriend or both?"
"Maybe I'll come," he corrects.
"But, hey, do they need donations?"
"Sure, always. My friend's on the organizing committee, so I could bring her the money if you want."
Harry thinks about the sum he's likely to give.
"If they've got a vault, I can transfer it to them, right?"
She smiles brightly.
"Yeah, awesome. I'll get you their info."
Harry stops by his favorite Pakistani restaurant for dinner that night, the place Hermione introduced him to when she was on her big kick of trying to get him to embrace his heritage more. It's a Muggle place, tiny, and he's convinced it has the best kebabs in London. As he waits for his order, he thinks about Zabini. How had he not known she was, well, a woman? Had there been signs? Not that Harry had befriended the Slytherins who came back 8th year. They'd all just sort of tolerated each other. He thinks McGonagall wanted it to be this grand new start, all of them coming together, bonding or something. But it hadn't happened that way. Harry had practically sleepwalked through the year. Maybe there'd been bonding for some of the others. He doesn't know for sure that there wasn't. All he remembers are the nights he'd sneak out of his and Ron's room, and he'd go into the forest, almost as if to test himself, to check that it really had happened. He'd died there. And he'd come back. Sometimes he feels like he hasn't come back. Or that coming back without that piece of Riddle's soul in him has left him different. Maybe even deficient. "Thanks," he says to the pretty Pakistani girl who hands him his sack of kebabs. He goes home, eats, watches the telly, and he thinks about Friday. Malfoy's back at the Black Dove, and he's dancing again. Harry lets out a long breath, seeing that Malfoy appears to once again be alone. Still, Harry darts his gaze around, looking for the bloke he stunned 2 weeks ago, just in case. Sergio is tending bar again, along with another younger man, and though they're quite busy, Sergio clocks Harry shortly after he enters and gives him a disgruntled frown. Harry supposes decking another customer wasn't his finest moment. Thankfully, no one looks ready to toss him out onto the pavement. Harry forgoes the bar entirely, though, and starts making his way directly over to Malfoy. Mid-move, Malfoy sees him, blinks, and then smirks. He dances anew, lifting his arms over his head and closing his eyes, hips rolling to the beat.
"Harry Potter, as I live and breathe," he says when Harry walks close.
He opens his eyes again, smirk still sitting on his lips, but softer, inviting. Harry begins to move too, and Malfoy's eyebrow goes up.
"This is a new development. Didn't realize you could dance."
"I can't do stodgy old ballroom," Harry clarifies. He looks Malfoy up and down, a small thrill running through him at doing it, that he does nothing to disguise his own appraisal. Malfoy's hair is loose this time, touching his shoulders and flowing just beyond. He's in the magenta dragonhide again, but he's paired it with a light pink t-shirt, its cap sleeves showing off a little bit of his shoulders. There's a cartoon picture of a strawberry right in the middle of the chest.
"Not see-through this time," Harry comments. "Thank you for reminding me. You owe me a top, Potter."
Harry smiles a little.
"I suppose I do, don't I?"
Malfoy's eyes go a little darker. He moves a touch closer. Harry lets him. They don't touch, and the not touching feels as illicit as a kiss.
"Who's the band tonight?" Harry half shouts. "What?"
Malfoy leans in, his ear primed for listening.
"I said, who's the band?"
"Oh, that's Mad Thestral."
"Mad Thestral?
You like them?"
"They're all right. I like the guitar."
Malfoy leans in again.
"The lead guitarist's really hot, isn't he?"
An uncomfortable heat flares through Harry, and when Malfoy leans back to check Harry's expression, he looks pleased. Lazy pleased. Seductive pleased. Harry puts his hands on Malfoy's hips. They keep dancing. After a couple of songs, when Harry's starting to sweat a little, Malfoy jerks his head toward the bar.
"I need a drink."
Harry trails after him, unaccountably excited that Malfoy has insinuated Harry should follow.
"Fiendfire?"
Malfoy asks Harry when Sergio looks at them.
"Yeah, how did you know?"
4 fiendfires, Malfoy orders before he turns back.
"I'm observant," he says.
"I've got it."
Harry lays his hand over Malfoy's when he goes to pay. Malfoy flinches, but then shrugs.
"Suit yourself, Potter."
They slam the first 2 shots. Malfoy gives him a considering look.
"What?"
"Well, you're either as obsessed with me as you've always been, or you're obsessed with saving people still. I'm just wondering which it is."
"Why can't it be both?"
Malfoy's frown deepens. Harry steps closer to him, made brave by the alcohol tumbling around in his blood.
"Which one do you want it to be?"
Malfoy picks up his 2nd shot, downs it.
"Let's dance."
Harry drinks down the 2nd fiendfire with a grimace and follows Malfoy back out onto the dance floor. They dance for what is probably hours, but feels like minutes. Around 3 songs in, Malfoy had asked, close, his lips against Harry's ear,
"Do you want to go to the loo and let me suck you off?"
Apparently his views on sex in the loo had changed. And Harry had wanted that. He still wants that.
but he'd said, "Later," and Malfoy had given him a funny look, but then they'd kept dancing. Now the bar's closing, and out on the pavement the air is chill and soft.
"Your place?"
Malfoy asks, huddling into his jacket and brushing up against Harry, his gaze on Harry's lips. "I'm hungry," Harry says. "Are you hungry?" Malfoy blinks, taken by surprise, but then says,
Yeah, I could eat.
"Let's walk there."
"Where?"
Malfoy asks, now looking around like maybe he's thinking about ditching Harry after all. "I know a place," Harry tells him. "You'll like it." Though he has no idea if Malfoy will, actually. Malfoy sighs. "Fine, then." He rolls his eyes. "Let's walk. Like idiots." As they walk, Malfoy takes his wand out and sticks it between his teeth. Then he twists his hair up into a high bun, pierces it through with the wand, and, miraculously, it stays there. Harry stares at it like it's the first time he's seen magic. He makes himself look away, down at his own shoes as he walks. "When did you know Sabini was trans?" Harry asks. It's more of a blurt, really.
"When she told me," is Malfoy's answer.
"Which was when?"
"When she got expelled during 8th year.
"You didn't come back for 8th year, Harry says.
"You're so sharp, Potter."
Harry scoffs, sticking his hands in his jeans pockets. A light breeze tickles the backs of his arms. He trains his gaze up now, at the deep blue night, the buildings in the distance lit up.
"She must have trusted you, to tell you something like that." "I knew her my entire life, and she only told me 2.5 years ago.
He frowns at the street.
"I was untrustworthy nearly 19 years of my life, apparently."
Harry nods.
"But you're cool with it now? You're okay with it?"
"Correct. I'm not an evil cunt anymore."
"You're just a regular cunt?"
"Fuck you," Malfoy says, but he's smiling.
"We cross here." Harry points when they reach the next intersection. Then, "Can I call you Draco?"
"What, are we friends now?"
"No, I mean, not really, no." They cross the street, pass another couple, 2 men, but they're definitely a couple, not like him and Malfoy. Then Malfoy says,
"Sure."
"Sure what?"
"Sure, you can call me Draco, Potter."
Harry snorts. One more street, and then they've arrived. Harry stands under the bright red and yellow sign and says, "This is it."
"Potter, this is McDonald's."
"You ever tried it?"
"Good Merlin, no."
The degree to which he's aghast feels very Malfoy, and sort of hilarious.
"Well then, don't knock it. Come on."
Minutes later, they're in a beige booth out in the children's play area, and Draco is stuffing his face with a burger.
"This is so good. Potter, this is really good."
"Aren't you glad I made you get 4 of them?
"Mmm,"
Draco exclaims, aggressively chewing. He's got a dollop of ketchup clinging to the corner of his mouth, but Harry doesn't tell him, just taking a bite of his Big Mac, and then offering that to Draco for a taste, too.
"Really?"
Draco manages. And when he's swallowed, he tries Harry's burger and then moans again.
"Why? How do they do this?"
"I really don't know. Try the chips."
"What the fuck?"
Draco says, licking the salt from his lips and staring at the chips in his fingers, half eaten. He licks again and finally gets the ketchup.
"And this drink? It's incredible."
"That's a Coke."
"And it is."
Draco eats 3 little cheeseburgers, leaving the 4th for Harry, but then stealing half Harry's Big Mac. He frowns, looking at all the balled-up papers the foods came in.
"I shouldn't be allowed to come here again,"
he says, so seriously Harry laughs. They're outside once more, and walking a bit aimlessly when Draco says,
"I might need 30 minutes or so, you know, before we do it."
Harry takes a breath, holds it, then says, "Let's not, tonight." Draco frowns at him.
"You don't want to have sex?"
"I didn't say I don't want to."
"Okay.
I just don't think we should tonight." They walk a bit further. The night has cooled considerably, and Draco shivers even in his jacket.
Are we still going to your place?
There's something in his voice that worries Harry.
He's calm. Nothing he's said sounds urgent. But there's an electricity rising in the air between them, and it's not sex, but fear. Draco's afraid.
If you want to, Harry tells him, we could hang out. Or sleep. So you don't want to be friends. We're not going to have sex. We'll just hang out. That's a weird kink to have, Potter.
Harry smiles. He shrugs. They arrive at an apparition point and stop, turning toward each other. Harry waits, looking at Draco's uncertain expression under the white spray of streetlight. Draco swallows.
Okay, Potter.
You could call me Harry, you know.
Draco meets his gaze. The smirk is back.
We'll see.
Harry touches his elbow and sidelongs him to his flat. They don't talk much after that, and they don't fuck either. Harry flicks on the telly and gets Draco a blanket and pillow from the hall cupboard, then thinks about it and gets himself the same. Draco curls up on his side of the sofa, and Harry takes the floor.
Have you seen television before? Harry asks around a fat yawn.
Of course I have, Draco says,
but something tells Harry he's lying. Maybe it's the way he's staring, rapt, at the screen, not even once glancing Harry's way, as the light flashes over his round eyes. Harry compresses his lips to avoid a smile. He props his head on his arm and watches the plot stumble along.
I'm going to get a glass of water, he says when there's a break between episodes. You want one?
But when he turns to look, Draco is fast asleep. Chapter 3 Harry's up half an hour before Draco is, and he really wants a shower, but is too afraid he'll come out and find Draco gone if he attempts one. Draco's arm is hanging off the sofa, sort of dangling over where Harry's feet had been. His lips are parted, and he's making a barely there wheezing sound. Harry's tiptoed to the kitchen, and so far all he's had is a glass of water and a couple of digestives. Tea is too loud. Even cereal feels like a violation of the quiet. He's weighing the pros of having food ready when Draco wakes up against the cons of waking him up by making it, when he hears a mumble from the sofa, the soft thunk of bare feet onto the floor.
What time is it?
Comes through the hands, rubbing at Draco's face.
11:30, Harry tells him.
Draco blinks at him. It's not altogether too far a distance from Harry's living room to his kitchen, so the marks on Draco's face from the pillowcase creases are plainly visible, as is the little jolt he gives at hearing the time. He starts shoving his feet into his shoes.
Shit.
What?
I have an appointment.
An appointment?
Where?
It's Saturday.
I have appointments, Potter.
Tying his shoes like he wants to strangle his own feet.
Okay. Do you have time for tea first, at least?
No.
His hands push through his hair, only to find the amazingly still stuck there wand. He withdraws it, sticks it back between his teeth, combs his fingers through his hair, pats his pockets, says, shit, again, the word now misshapen around the wand, having realized he's in a pair of Harry's sweats. He reaches for the dragonhide trousers hanging over the back of the sofa, checks both front pockets, finds a hair elastic in the second one, and uses it to make a ponytail, spitting his wand out into his lap in the process. Harry is entranced by the whole thing, and he watches Draco from his vantage point, leaning his forearms on the kitchen counter. Something strange happening in his stomach that could be hunger, but is probably something else.
I can take you there, Harry says, without really thinking about it.
On what, your broom?
Visions of the fire beneath them, the room of hidden things becoming the room of charred nothingness, of death. Then, something he hasn't thought of in a long time, which is ridiculous, seeing as his employer is who it is. He thinks about Quidditch. The two of them, fighting it out. The two of them, playing. He shrugs.
I can apparate.
Draco stands, looks down at himself,
the strawberry shirt and gray sweatpants.
Can I borrow these?
Sure, Harry says, dying to know what appointment he's going to in that outfit, although he'll probably stop by home to change. Harry is aflame with wanting to see where that is.
Why don't you flew? He suggests. I hate apparating after a night out drinking. I've barfed from it a couple times.
He hates using the flu, too, but he doesn't say as much. He needs Draco to agree to this mode of travel.
I didn't drink that much.
Still, Harry says, and leaves it at that. Draco frowns at him, but then he nods, and Harry tries not to look too excited. Draco grabs his trousers and clutches them against his body while he gets a fistful of flu powder. Then he turns to Harry.
I'll clean these and then get them back to you, meaning the sweats.
Or you could hold them hostage until I replace your top. He blushes then, as though remembering the exact circumstances under which the top had been lost. Harry sends him a small smile.
You should have sorted Slytherin, Draco tells him.
Then he throws the powder down and says quickly,
1007 Stones Throw Court,
and disappears into Harry's hearth. Harry wastes no time then, scampering around and yanking on jeans, stumbling into his shoes, casting a breath-freshening charm rather than brushing his teeth. He steps out his front door, thinks of the address Draco recited, murmurs, 2 houses down and across the street, hoping he's good enough so as not to splinch or land in Draco's living room just as he's arriving home. It's not his smoothest apparition, and he stumbles, catching himself on the nearest structure.
Ow!
He hisses, sticking the heel of his hand in his mouth on reflex, then shaking it before squinting at the large splinter of wood he's now got lodged there. He pulls his wand, casts and drags the splinter out, then casts again, cleaning the small wound and sealing it up.
Where's Luna and her dittany when you need her?
Harry looks at his surroundings and frowns. The neighborhood he's landed in isn't a good one. The houses are quite small and all rather run down, with peeling paint, or none at all, sagging foundations, shattered windows. It almost feels deserted, except that Harry can hear the sound of children playing a street or so away, the juxtaposition of their happiness making the drab street even more depressing. And then he sees Draco's house. It's the smallest one, no more than a shack, really. The steps leading to the front door have caved in and look especially dangerous. The windows are boarded up, too. There was once a chimney, probably, but now there's only a broken pile of bricks in what passes for a garden, all dead grass and weeds. Harry double-checks the address, hoping against hope that he apparated wrong. But then, a few minutes later, Draco emerges from the house. He's in a pair of tan coveralls, and he wastes no time jumping from the rickety porch, circumventing the bad steps entirely, and then walking down the street at a clip, his heavy boots making very little noise from where Harry watches him at a distance. And Harry came prepared for this. He pulls his shrunken invisibility cloak from his pocket, resizes it, and then slings it over and around himself, following. For whatever reason, Draco doesn't apparate. Harry probably still could have followed him if he had. He may have quit aura training 3 months in and a handful of years ago now, but he retained enough to be able to follow an apparition signature that's still fresh. But instead, Draco makes his way to a corner where an abandoned cigarette store sits, and he pulls his wand for a night bus. Harry's heart pulls up into his throat as he jogs a little to catch up, and then stealthily boards the bus behind Draco. Not close enough for Draco to feel his presence, but not far enough that he misses the open door. Draco hops up onto a bed and sits, looking out the window, and Harry takes a place, standing 2 beds back and across, gripping a pole to keep from flying to the back of the bus as it careens down the street. Guilt crowds in up against the excitement that he's doing this, as Harry watches Draco's serene profile, the way he blinks at the passing scenery, which is mostly a blur at this speed. Wherever he's going, it's familiar. This is something he does, something he's used to. Harry swallows, afraid his pulse is going so hard it could be audible. They disembark in a nicer neighborhood than the one they started from, but it's still modest, a collection of cottages, and Harry sees right away why they didn't apparate. There's a sign advertising the name of the area, Silver Grove, and beneath the pretty cursive writing, a smaller admonition, Apparition Magic Prohibited.
Harry follows Draco down a pleasant little street of manicured gardens until they reach a quaint bungalow, which Draco walks up to, knocking on the door. An older wizard, probably over 100, answers, his shoulders rounded, a cane wobbling in his grip. He lets Draco in, the door closes, and Harry stands on the pavement, watching for their shadows to move across the sheer curtains over the windows. 15 minutes pass until Draco reemerges. The old man is smiling, shaking Draco's hand, and then Draco starts toward Harry on the pavement again, and Harry goes to move out of the way, only to step right on the hem of his cloak, sending him into a tumble over some low hedges and into the neighboring garden.
"Harry,"
Draco says, sounding both shocked and annoyed at once. Harry can hardly blame him, and as he rolls free of his own cloak, he gives Draco a sheepish look, receiving a thunderous frown in response, and then, a moment later, the rolling of Draco's eyes.
"Salazar, you are twisted,"
he says, marching down the pavement again.
"Sorry," Harry says, following. "No, you're not. You're only sorry you got caught."
Then,
"Clumsy buffoon."
"What were you doing here?" Harry asks, catching up to him now.
"I told you I had an appointment. I can't believe you fucking followed me. In your stupid cloak, no less."
He scoffs, then backtracks.
"What am I saying? Of course I believe you followed me."
He turns down the street where the night bus had stopped, and now they're walking past small, Wicks-owned shops, a cafe, a bookstore.
"I was curious," Harry says, lamely.
"Not every curiosity needs to be satisfied, Potter."
He stops abruptly, rounding on Harry.
"What am I to you, hmm? Am I just Harry Potter's new pet project? Follow Malfoy around, see what he does?"
"I... no.
I liked it better when this was about sex."
Harry blinks.
"It's not about sex."
Something in Draco's hard veneer falters, and Harry sees him try to write it again. Harry's gaze drops and takes in the outfit, the work boots, comes back up.
"These are hot,"
he says, lifting his chin to the coveralls. Draco inhales, sweet spots of pink rising to his cheeks.
"Are they now?"
he asks.
"Show me."
Harry looks down the street, and Draco's hand finds his chin, drawing his gaze back to himself. He takes Harry's hand and pulls him into a shallow alley between shops. It's daylight. There are people on those streets. Still, Harry lets himself be pulled into the little bit of shadow the alley affords them. He walks Draco up against the wall and starts unzipping the coveralls down the front. Draco's breath goes short as Harry parts the fabric, runs his hands over Draco's white t-shirt beneath. Then Harry kneels, unzipping them the rest of the way, finding Draco's boxers already tenting. He glances up at Draco's face, the anticipation paired with something like worry. Perhaps Draco's encountering some measure of disbelief that Harry might actually do this. Harry himself can hardly believe Draco's going to let him. He leans in, rubs his face along the cotton-covered bulge, and then slips Draco's shorts down until his cock comes out. He takes it in his hand, stroking it a little and watching it jump, hearing Draco gasp above him.
"That's right, Potter,"
Draco says, and Harry thinks he's trying for commanding, and isn't altogether failing at it. But there's a hint of something else in his voice, an awestruck quality.
"Put it in your mouth."
Like a dare, he half expects to be rejected. Harry opens his lips, takes the head of Draco's cock between them, and licks around the crown. All of Draco's breath leaves him in a rush, and pride fills Harry's body at making him sound like that. Feel like that. Draco tastes a little salty, a little bitter, and his skin is so soft over the rigid length of his cock. Harry takes it deeper, loving the feel of it pushing into him, over his tongue, close to the back of his throat, before he pulls back, tongues under the crown some more.
"Potter! Oh, fuck!"
Draco's not touching him, his hands scrabbling against the brick at his back, making fists, opening again. Harry gently tugs at his ballsack as he goes down, moving slowly on his dick
like they aren't in a bloody alley in the middle of the day. He'd prefer to make this last. The feeling of Draco sliding past his lips over and over is heady, almost transcendent. His lips tingle, and his jaw begins to ache. He moans and only comes up to say, "Hold my head. Fuck me." The desire for it stronger than his embarrassment of asking for it.
"Jesus,"
Draco breathes, and then takes Harry's head in his hands and starts slowly and shallowly thrusting, being oddly careful about it. Harry looks up at him to find an expression on his face like concentration shaded with fragile tenderness, like incomprehension and longing. Harry watches it transform on his face into something fierce, maybe even possessive, as he starts to take Harry's mouth. Harry is hard in his jeans, so hard he may come, but when he unzips, Draco's hand tightens in his hair.
"Don't you dare."
Draco fucks his face much harder, and Harry melts for it, eyes rolling shut. It's painful not touching himself. He relaxes his throat and allows Draco to use him like a receptacle, and it's not long before Draco starts breathing in concert with his thrusts, little whimpering breaths that then cascade into a decadent groan when he comes.
"Don't swallow," Draco gets out,
and before he knows it, Harry is being hauled to his feet and Draco is opening his mouth for it. The kiss is filthy, Harry sharing Draco's cum with him, both of them swallowing it now, having it messily. Draco groans, his hand shoving down into Harry's pants and pulling quick on his cock. They kiss through Harry's orgasm, and Draco inhales his sounds, thumb smearing over his shooting slit.
"Oh, my God,"
Harry pants against Draco's sticky, bitter lips when he's finished. Draco wipes his hand on Harry's jeans, nibbles gently at Harry's bottom lip for a second. They right their clothes, casting cleaning charms on themselves. Harry's almost out of his own skin, disoriented. But the more he catches his breath, the more his body makes him aware of all the places Draco touched him. His throat aches, his scalp tingles from Draco pulling his hair. Draco's fingers curling around his cock are like a ghost sensation now.
"That was..."
Harry starts, and doesn't know how to finish.
"Yeah,"
Draco agrees.
"Do you have another appointment?"
Harry asks with his new, roughened-up voice. Draco shakes his head, "No."
"You haven't eaten yet, right? We passed a cafe."
Draco looks down at his work clothes and back up. Harry pulls his wand.
"May I?"
At Draco's nod, Harry transfigures the coveralls into blue jeans and a rather nondescript jacket the same tan as the original material.
"Not bad," says Draco.
"People say I'm handy with one of these." Harry lifts the wand self-consciously and is surprised when Draco gives him a grin.
"Shall we?"
he asks.
"Sure, Potter,"
Draco says, and they exit the alley together. The cafe has cute blue and white checked plastic tablecloths with little napkin dispensers on each table. They serve cold and hot sandwiches and soups, and Harry orders himself a tuna melt while Draco peruses the menu up on a chalkboard behind the registers.
"I'll have half a turkey club," he says.
"Whole," Harry corrects. "A whole one, please. And crisps." He pays, and Draco demurs, pretending to look in the bake case at their selection of muffins and scones.
"Want one?"
Harry asks.
"No." And then, "Thank you."
They sit at a table by the window. The sun is behind some clouds, but the days are getting warmer and warmer, and soon a window seat will be uncomfortable.
"So you dress in coveralls and go save old people from what? Domestic mishaps?"
Draco sighs.
"Something like that."
"Why the apparition prohibition?" "Merlin, that sounds like a band, doesn't it?" Draco smiles.
"It's for their safety. It's an Elder Wicks community, and they can get lost easily if they apparate away. There are all kinds of anti-apparition wards up."
"Makes sense," Harry says, and then asks, "Do you just do that on Saturdays?"
"Whenever."
"And you fetch kegs and clean things behind bars?" Draco shrugs. "What other work do you do?" Draco looks at him.
Things, he says. Just things.
A middle-aged woman in a flour-dusted apron brings them their sandwiches, and they both tuck in for a bit.
Good?
Harry asks after a minute.
Well, it's not McDonald's.
Harry laughs, takes a napkin from the container, and wipes his mouth. He thinks about it a moment and then says,
I work at Quality Quidditch. I know, Draco tells him, a small frown appearing on his brow now. I know where you work. That's why I said the thing I said. That terrible thing I said, he adds.
The Quidditch bloke thing.
Aren't you the sad, horny, pathetic one, jerking it to the very man you'll never be?
How could Harry forget?
I'm sorry, Draco says softly. About that. And about the thing I said about you and Ginevra. About all the shit I said.
It's okay, Harry says, meaning it. And Draco's gaze flits to his briefly before he takes another bite, looking at his plate instead. They finish their lunches and then settle into a silence less awkward than it is charged.
What are you doing next? Harry asks. Going to B's.
For the rest of the day?
And night.
Harry nods. He clears his throat.
Do you want to come over when you're done?
Draco's eyes are round and guileless then, and Harry stares into them, the swirling silver that looks almost blue now that the sun is coming out from behind the clouds and striking his face. Draco nods.
Good, Harry says. And he means that, too.
He's checking his watch again when he realizes he's never actually given Draco his address. Harry throws on his trainers, neglecting to tie them, and apparates to Zabini's in a rush at around half midnight. Breathless, he's on his way in when he meets Draco coming out, the two of them stopping short in the doorway.
Hi, Harry says.
Draco blinks.
Hi, I thought...
Yeah, I never told you my address.
Wouldn't want you wandering around Catford yelling Potter or something. Yes, that sounds just like something I would do.
A patron squeezes past them, and they belatedly move to the side and, consequently, closer to one another. There's an apparition point at a park nearby if you want to walk, Harry says.
Apparition points are stupid when you can apparate from anywhere.
I think it's for when you lose your wand and such. They've begun strolling down the pavement as they talk.
I realize that, Potter.
Harry.
What?
Please, he says, with more quiet gravity than he actually means to.
Call me Harry.
Draco sighs.
I only meant to say that when you're you, Harry, I would think you could apparate wherever you bloody well please, whether you've gone and lost your wand like an imbecile or not.
It makes Harry's head spin. The compliments running into insults like Draco does, and he finds himself smiling at his own feet, and then frowning, because his shoes are still untied.
Hold on,
he says, stopping to kneel and tie his laces. He hears a thwarted laugh and looks up to find Draco glimmering with it.
What?
He asks.
Nothing,
Draco says, shaking his head and turning his amused gaze down the street instead. They continue on toward the park, with Harry stealing glimpses of the man next to him, noting that he's got his hair half pulled back, half flowing down his neck. His clothes are simple. Dark green trousers, white t-shirt. It wasn't 12 hours previous that Harry was kneeling in front of him. Harry clears his throat.
Merlin, that's some moon tonight.
Draco takes his elbow, stops him walking, pulls him close, and kisses him. Harry makes a startled sound into it, and then a different sound altogether, allowing Draco to kiss him deeply.
Apparate us from here,
Draco breathes against his lips.
Okay,
Harry says, stupid with it, and then sidelongs them back to his flat. Clothes come off in a bit of a frenzy as Harry half pushes and Draco half pulls them down the entry hall and into Harry's living room. They hit the arm of the sofa, and Draco shimmies his trousers and pants down, Harry nodding at him in wordless agreement, before Draco turns around and bends over, and Harry casts to get him slick, and then drops his wand on the floor, unbuttons his jeans, unzips, gets himself in hand. When he pushes into Draco's arse, Draco huffs a loud breath, both surprise and desire.
Yeah,
he sighs afterward,
when Harry begins thrusting. He reaches back, grabs Harry's hip, drops his head to the cushions. Harry feels possessed by it, would crawl inside Draco if he could. The friction builds just right, and before he knows it, it's happening. He's coming. He throws his head back and gives a groan, which is also a shout, which is also a plea, for it never to end.
"Sorry,"
he says, panting. He came so fast. Draco touches where they're connected, a finger pushing, trying. When Harry slips out, Draco's fingers sink inside, and Harry is entranced by the look of it. He adds a finger, too, so that they're both fucking Draco's arse for a few moments. Then Draco whimpers, moves his hand to his cock instead. And while Harry plunges three fingers into his own cum, Draco shivers and shakes through his orgasm, his hole clenching tightly. Harry wishes they were in bed then. He's beset with the unwieldy desire to hold him. Instead, he pulls his fingers free, wipes them on his jeans, then gets his wand, cleans them both up, the sofa too, zips his jeans, watching Draco put himself somewhat back together as well. When Draco turns around, he sits on the arm of the sofa, his skin flushed and so fucking pretty.
"Why is it so good with you?"
Harry asks, seizing up with the vulnerability of it. But Draco just shakes his head.
"I don't know,"
he admits, and it makes Harry feel better.
"Do you want some food?"
Harry checks. Draco smirks at him.
"I'm not hungry. You're always hungry, aren't you?"
Harry shrugs. Draco picks his t-shirt up off the ground and pulls it over his head.
"You don't have to get dressed," Harry says.
Draco's eyebrow goes up.
"I meant that you could... It's late. We could sleep. I have a home, Harry."
"Sort of," Harry blurts, and then flinches at the look that comes over Draco's face, the flash of hurt hardening into something else.
"Right," he says. "I'll be going."
"Draco, I didn't mean..." Draco pushes past him in a hurry.
"No, listen,"
Harry tries.
"I'll come with you."
"Don't bother," Draco throws back at him before he disappears through Harry's front door and slams it behind him.
"Fuck."
Harry runs his hands through his hair, sits on the floor, leans his head back against the sofa, and closes his eyes in defeat. Chapter 4. He misses the protest. Not because he had anything else to do that day. He misses it purely out of paralysis. This feeling that sometimes takes over him and stops even his best impulses. He struggles to look at Chandra in the eye the next day at work, though she doesn't seem to hold it against him. Harry holds it against himself. He doesn't even attempt to see Draco for 2 whole weeks. That's guilt as well. But then, on a sultry Friday night in early July, the need to see him outweighs his own shame at what he'd said, and he shows up at the Black Dove, ready to apologize his arse off. Draco is there, dancing. He's got his hair in the high bun that makes Harry's heart flip over in his chest and gets his cock interested. The magenta dragonhide hugs his arse and thighs, and Harry's realizing they're one of maybe 4 pairs of trousers he owns. He's shirtless, which is enraging because he's got 3 potential suitors dancing around him like Draco is some tropical bird performing a highly erotic mating dance. This is not far from the truth. Harry sighs and takes a seat at the bar. He orders a pint from Sergio, who actually looks like he might pity Harry for once. Harry lifts the glass at him, turns on his seat to face the dance floor, and, masochistically, Harry watches. He downs 3 pints like that, with Draco at first noticing him and turning away, then looking back at him and smirking as he flings his arms around another man, then looking at Harry and continuing to look while he moves. Around midnight, he shakes his head at one of his dance partners and begins making for the door. Harry follows.
"Enjoy the show?"
Draco asks on the pavement. He pulls a miniaturized top from his pocket, resizes it and pulls it over his head, somehow without disturbing the bun.
"Looks like you had fun," Harry says, rather than answer.
They begin walking down the street, leaving the crowd outside the club behind. Draco shrugs.
I didn't see you take a drink for 2 hours. Are you sober?
None of your business, Draco says.
Harry touches his arm, and Draco flings his hand off.
Harry stops walking.
I'm sorry.
Draco turns back to him, eyes fiery in the warm night.
For what?
I didn't mean to insult your house.
Why shouldn't you? Draco asks. It's certainly no Malfoy Manor.
No, it's better, Harry says. As Draco frowns at him warily now, Harry steps closer again. I have no business judging your life now, but I can judge your life before. And this is better. You're doing better.
Draco rolls his eyes.
I know that sounds condescending. Fuck. Harry pulls on his hair, taking 2 steps away down the pavement and then stalking back. You make me mental. I don't know how to talk to you, Draco. I just know that...
You know that what?
He says it softly, wariness wavering.
I want to be around you.
He metaphorically pulls up his Gryffindor pants and clears his throat. I like being around you. Now Draco lifts his chin imperiously, but there's a different glint in his eyes.
Show me,
he says. Like the coveralls day, but not. Sexy, but less overt. Like he's taking a chance on Harry. A real chance. Harry smiles at him, sees it transform Draco's expression into something more open. Come on, Harry says, and they keep walking. It's too late for Harry's kebab place to be open, but he has some leftovers at home, which he tells Draco about.
Sure,
Draco says, and this time when they apparate to Harry's flat, there's no hasty disrobing, no kissing, no fucking, but there's something else. Something that feels as thrilling to Harry, as special. They sit on Harry's sofa and put the telly on while they eat, and Draco scarfs down 2 kebabs, making noises like it's the best thing he's ever eaten, which, considering Harry didn't prepare the food himself, makes him weirdly proud. He can't help but like that pure-blood, lily-white Draco Malfoy seems to love Pakistani food. After they've eaten, after the show they're watching concludes, Harry turns the sound down, and they talk. Not about anything, really, or a little bit about everything. He tells Draco about Ron and Hermione, about the baby, and Draco listens, nods, smiles when Harry tells his favorite rose story. Harry asks about Pansy, and Draco talks about her for a bit, segues over to Greg Goyle, to some of the other people they both know.
Did you know Lisa Turpin got turned last year?
Harry startles.
Vampire or werewolf? Werewolf. Freak accident, actually. The person who did it wasn't charged with a crime. Still lost their job, though.
Harry thinks about all this. He shakes his head.
Is Lisa okay?
I mean, Hermione says they're working on legislation to protect human creatures more, but...
It will take years,
Draco nods.
Although everyone would be safer if wares didn't have to hide and get their wolfsbane on the black market and all that rubbish.
Yeah.
But I think she's okay. Pansy said Lisa's got good family. Open-minded family, he amends, when it seems he thinks Harry might take good the wrong way.
I'm glad, Harry says, and then thinks about Lavender. Draco yawns, leaning back into the sofa cushions. He shuts his eyes.
It's late, he says, not moving.
Yeah, Harry agrees. Draco opens his eyes without lifting his head and looks at Harry.
We could go to bed, Harry offers,
heart going so fast it feels dangerous. Draco says nothing, but he stands slowly from the sofa, and Harry does too. Harry passes him and starts down his hallway, dousing lights as he goes. He hears Draco's footsteps behind him, and then another yawn. They undress, each on a different side of the bed, Draco having waited to see which one Harry would claim. Harry keeps his boxers on, sets his glasses on the nightstand. Draco strips nude.
Would you like some pajamas?
Harry asks, throwing back the covers and, unaccountably, blushing.
I'm okay like this, if you're okay with it.
Harry chances a look at him.
I'm okay with it.
Draco smiles. They crawl in, lie facing each other. Draco comes closer, tentatively. His knuckles brush Harry's thigh, and Harry watches his face, his lashes fluttering as he drops his gaze, even as his hand seeks out Harry's cock inside the fly of his pants.
You don't have to, Harry says.
I want to.
Draco meets his gaze. He gives three slow strokes. Harry gasps. He reaches for Draco, too, finding him already erect, just from touching Harry. They stay like that, looking at one another, then down and then back up again, as they give each other handjobs. It's not explosive, it's intimate. It's good. Harry's orgasm takes him almost by surprise, and he paints Draco's belly with it.
Mmm,
Draco hums appreciatively, then looks down at Harry's hand around him as it keeps working. Watching it, he comes too, with a series of whimpering sighs. They're panting, quietly, and then Draco whispers a cleaning charm, wandless, and Harry says, "Nice." Draco grins at him, moves a tiny bit closer. Harry pulls the covers up over their bodies now. Draco closes his eyes, and Harry lies there, amazed, watching Draco Malfoy fall asleep. He comes over the next Friday, too, and the Friday after that. Draco plays chess with him, which is something Harry's missed lately, since Ron is caring for a baby when he's not assistant managing Weezes, and having the time for even one game is a thing of the past. Draco doesn't beat him as badly as Ron did, either. They're more evenly matched, and Harry enjoys that almost half the time he can win. He would have thought Draco would be a sore loser about it, and he sort of is, but in a way that makes Harry laugh. And when Harry offers him a blowjob in consolation, well, everybody wins then. He leaves in the middle of the night a couple times, and then, this most recent Saturday morning, Harry wakes to see Draco still in bed with him, and they have breakfast together before Draco tells him he has an appointment and has to go.
Okay,
Harry says as he cleans up their dirty dishes. He takes a deep breath and then asks,
Want to get lunch tomorrow?
I'll be at B's all day.
When Harry, still at the sink, looks over his shoulder at him, Draco adds,
Inventory.
Harry hesitates too long on his next question, which was going to be about dinner sometime, and Draco gives him a wave, a small smile.
See you, Harry,
he says on his way out the door. Hermione and Ron invite him over for Sunday dinner, and so Harry spends Sunday afternoon preparing an apple pie from scratch. It's been a long time since he's baked anything. After the Dursleys, it took a while to stop associating work in the kitchen with his abuse at their hands, his servitude imposed and never appreciated or rewarded in any way. Hermione tells him it's not necessary. She's always insisted that she and Ron feed him and never the other way around. But he sees some pretty apples in the grocery store on Sunday morning, and to his own surprise, he wants to. He's excited for it, for the time it will take, the care, for the way his flat will smell while it's baking, for the looks on their faces when he shows up with it in his hands, still warm.
Oh, Harry, this is so beautiful. I almost don't want to eat it,
Hermione says, taking it and ushering him inside.
We're eating it,
Ron yells from the vicinity of the living room.
Where's Rosie?
Molly absconded with her for the evening, Hermione tells him. I don't remember the last time we had a child-free hour, much less time to have people over for dinner. And you're so much better than people,
she adds, pushing her hair back off her forehead. The circles under her eyes are darker than ever.
Can I help with the cooking?
It's all finished, and Ron's setting the table. Come on, sit down. Would you like a drink?
Water's fine.
Bottled or tap?
She skirts by her husband on the way into the kitchen.
Bottled, if you've got it.
Harry watches them, two adults living their adult lives. Ron's got a bit of a beard coming in. Hermione seems to be starting a cardigan collection in her spare time. He looks down at his t-shirt, jeans, and trainers, and he's not sure if they're leaving him behind or if he's somehow moved backwards. Dinner itself is lovely. Ron, having learned quite a bit from his mum, roasts a fine chicken. And Hermione says she bought a new cookbook and made the two sides.
It's delicious, Harry says, still chewing.
He mops up some gravy with a roll and shoves half of it into his mouth.
How's work?
He asks, belatedly embarrassed for not having swallowed the roll first.
Oh,
Hermione says brightly, but without looking at him.
Well, environmental law never stops, so it's busy, but good.
Too busy, Ron puts in. Hermione had to drop down to 30 hours a week, which is about half what the firm wanted from her. Can you believe that?
I didn't realize you'd cut your hours, Harry says, trying to catch Hermione's gaze and failing.
Good thing, too, Ron says. We were pretty much scrambling, what with juggling Rosie and all.
Right,
Hermione says. She looks at her husband and smiles, though it doesn't quite reach her eyes.
I'll get that beautiful pie.
She rises.
Harry?
She asks, holding out a hand for his plate.
I can help you clean up.
No, no. You and Ron go sit.
She and Ron exchange one of their looks.
What? Does apple not go with roast or something?
It goes perfectly,
she assures him.
Tea?
Sounds great,
Ron says, and then stands as well, motioning Harry into the living room.
Let's have dessert in here, shall we?
Yeah, okay. Hermione does some industrious banging around in the kitchen, and Ron sits in his armchair, leans over his knees, looking at Harry with concern.
How are you?
Harry frowns a little.
I'm fine. Why? No reason,
Ron says, unconvincingly.
We just haven't seen you in a while.
Hasn't been that long, has it? Ron shrugs.
Well, I mean, I'm good. Work's fine.
Every so often, Ron does this to him, corners him with a friendly worry about how Harry's life is going, and every time, Harry has to report that it's going exactly the same as the last time Ron got worried about him. He feels like he's failed some ill-defined test Ron has set up for him. He's not sure when Ron appointed himself arbiter of success in life, or when Ron himself became the responsible one of the two of them. Harry doesn't exactly feel irresponsible, just because he's not a business owner or producing an heir. But things aren't exactly the same as last time, are they? He clears his throat.
Actually,
He stops, his cheeks growing warm. He thinks about Draco dancing. Draco eating McDonald's. Draco kissing him. Draco in his bed.
Well, I guess I've been seeing somebody.
Hermione arrives with tea and plates of pie, all bobbing gently on a wave of her magic. She and Ron look at each other again.
Merlin, what?
Harry asks impatiently, and then feels bad about it.
Sorry, it's just those looks you share. Other people can see them too, you know.
Ron sips his milky tea and looks at his wife. Apparently, it's her turn.
Harry,
she starts.
Hermione,
Harry replies with equal gravity.
Well, we've...
She glances at Ron and then says in a rush,
Ginny said he saw you and Malfoy kissing outside a club and then you disapparated together.
He blinks.
Ginny said,
He looks at Ron, back at Hermione. He looks at his piece of pie, and he nods.
Yeah, I've been seeing Malfoy.
So?
So, we simply thought that might be something you'd have shared with us.
You've been busy,
Harry says. He thinks pretty reasonably. But then the impatience is back, like it's been sitting there for months with no outlet, and is now over-eager.
Besides, with the way Ron spoke about him last time.
With good reason.
With old reason, Ron.
Look, Hermione interjects. No one is saying you shouldn't date him.
I think Ron might be saying it.
Ron, tell Harry you'll give Malfoy a chance.
I call him Draco now, Harry informs them.
For whatever reason, this is what sets Ron off.
You call him Draco now?
Well, yeah. Malfoy doesn't roll off the tongue quite as well while I'm coming. He knows it's an inflammatory thing to say, and also not quite true. Just because he's mostly switched to Draco doesn't mean
Malfoy, Malfoy, Malfoy
hasn't come sighing from his mouth on multiple occasions. But he's properly pissed at his friend now,
And Ron has no bloody business judging him about this, that Harry can see. And his pie looks good, for fuck's sake. He just wants to eat it in peace. He just wants his fucking friends back. I don't need you trying to manage my love life. Love, Ron barks. It's an expression. Ron, Hermione tries, but Harry talks over her. I don't actually need you trying to manage any part of my life, either one of you, and it feels like that's all you want to do lately, like it's become a pastime, like cricket or something. I'm fine. Just then, the flute chimes, and Hermione rises in a huff to go answer it, while he and Ron sit there sullenly, avoiding each other's eyes. What? Hermione says, her head in the hearth, voice muffled. Yes, of course. No, we wouldn't want that. Thank you. Yes, thank you, Molly. We'll be right there. She withdraws her head from the flames and remains kneeling there a moment. Is it Rose? Ron says, halfway to a panic already. Yes, but she's fine. It's a mild case of spatigroit. But your dad just got off that cough thing that he had for so long, and they don't want to take the chance of keeping her.
Right, okay, Ron says. Let's go get her. Then, sorry, Harry.
Harry shakes his head. Ill babies take precedence over this stupid fight, for sure. But Hermione hasn't risen from the floor, hasn't lifted her head. Dear? Ron starts, and Hermione shouts, Fuck! Louder than he or Ron had shouted at each other all night. Hermione, Ron says softly.
I'm all right. Sorry, it's fine, I just...
She stands up, dusts off her knees.
I'm sorry about the evening.
Harry thinks the evening went to shit well before the spattergroid, but he doesn't say so.
It's okay. I hope Rose gets well soon.
She nods, now looking so tired it's aged her 10 years in one night.
Are you...
Harry starts. He walks over to her, puts his hand on her shoulder, and she flinches, taking half a step away.
Are you okay?
I'm fine,
she says, her voice flatter than he's ever heard it. It almost scares him. She meets his gaze briefly, tears sticking to her lashes together.
We're all fine, she says.
Then she wipes her eyes.
Ron, will you wrap up a third of the pie and send it home with Harry, please? If you'll excuse me.
She stalks from the room. Ron and he stand there in the silence, until Ron finally says,
The pie really does look good.
He flew calls Ginny first thing when he gets home.
What the fuck, Gin?
I'm sorry,
she wails, seeming genuinely so.
I had no idea they'd be such dicks about it.
It's your brother. Of course he's going to be a dick about Malfoy.
Yeah,
she concedes, picking at her bedroom rug, eyes downcast. There's a trunk open behind her, and a pile of clothes laid out on her bed.
Are you going somewhere?
We've got an away match tomorrow. Team's leaving for Dublin tonight so we can get a practice in on the pitch ahead of time.
Ah, he says. Good luck, then.
Thanks.
She looks at him, and though he feels her thinking, it's not the same as when Ron or Hermione look at him and start thinking.
What?
One corner of her lips turns up.
It looked like a really good kiss.
Oh, Merlin.
He covers his eyes briefly, and her laugh chases him through the hearth flames.
Was it?
She pesters. He sighs, meets her gaze again, and finds the girl he used to know in the woman she's become.
Why are you so okay with it?
She shrugs.
Because I'm normal. Ron's acting like a tit.
He laughs.
I mean, he cares about me. He hasn't seen Draco since...
She nods.
Speaking of seeing Draco, he says, what were you doing in Peckham that night?
Not that any of you poofs would ever notice, but there's another club across the street.
The Lady Club?
Yes, Harry, the Lady Club. You're not the only one who got their kiss on that night.
Wow, okay.
Yeah,
she says, and because she's a ginger, she blushes like a beet.
Want to flew through and tell me about her? I've got apple pie.
I would, but...
She gestures to the trunk.
Right, yeah, he says. After you get back, then.
She nods.
I'd like that.
She looks like she means it.
I am sorry I outed you to the world's two biggest sticks in the mud, though. I should have just talked to you.
It's okay. We're talking now.
Let's not go so long next time, she says. Good luck for the match.
I don't need luck, she says with a cocky smile, and then cuts the flu connection between them.
Harry eats a slice of his pie alone in his flat, the silence of it alternating between being a comfort and edging toward disquiet. He checks his watch. Draco will still be at Zabini's. Belinda's, probably. A thrill works its way over his skin, thinking of him lifting boxes of champagne bottles, smoking out on the back steps, the thing they did right before that. It's a mild night, and the breeze feels good on his arms as he walks from where he's apparated to the club. When he tries the door, it's locked. He peeks around at the window, light from inside filtering out. He remembers Draco said something about inventory, but he'd figured they'd reopen for the evening crowd. Harry looks back over his shoulder, considers waiting on the pavement. He blinks up at a streetlight, then takes a deep breath and knocks. Belinda answers.
Potter, inventory's taking forever if you were looking for a drink.
She doesn't seem perturbed at his interruption and, in fact, smiles now.
Or were you looking for Draco?
This exact conversation is becoming ridiculously frequent. Harry scratches the back of his neck.
He said he'd be here.
Is he still? I'm sorry to disturb your work. It's not a problem, she says, and then calls behind her.
Draco!
When Draco appears, he's got his hair up in a highish bun, dirt smeared across one cheek, an apron over his white t-shirt and light blue jeans. And he's so attractive it's almost hard to keep looking at him. Except that Harry can't look away.
Harry, he says, slightly out of breath. What time is it?
Time for you to scoot, Belinda says.
No, I'm sorry, Harry offers quickly. I didn't mean... I can wait. Or I can just go?
Don't go,
Belinda and Draco say at once. Harry laughs. So does Belinda. While Draco just stands there going absurdly pink in the face.
The count's not finished.
Close enough, Belinda says. I can do the rest. I'm paying you a flat fee for this. You've helped me a ton, Draco. Go with Potter.
Draco swallows. His eyes are just a little bit wide, like Harry has, for once, caught him off guard. He takes the apron off and hands it to Belinda.
You two have fun now, she says,
with entirely too much mischief. And then closes the door on them. Harry hears it lock again and feels her wards go up.
She's not alone, is she?
Harry asks as they start down the street.
No, she's got Giordano, or Gigi. That's her boyfriend. Not to mention Carl.
Who's Carl?
There's St. Bernard.
Is Carl always at the bar?
Why haven't I seen him yet? It's not that Giordano, Gigi, the boyfriend, isn't interesting. It's only that a giant dog is more so.
Oh, he's incredibly lazy. He only wakes up if he senses some guard dog duty he needs to apply himself to. As long as nobody sketchy comes in the bar, he'll be asleep in the back, snoring.
Harry smiles. It sounds like a nice life, owning a bar, having a boyfriend, keeping a lazy dog.
What are you doing here?
Draco asks, though with no wary undertone, which is nice. Harry turns the smile he's still smiling on him.
Wanted to see you.
Oh, Draco says. Well, I look awful.
He rubs at the dirt smear on his cheek and only manages to smear it further.
You don't, Harry assures him. I'm not sure I'd mind if you did.
You're a strange fuck buddy, Draco tells him.
Harry laughs. Is that what we are?
I don't know. Aren't we?
Harry thinks about it as they cross a dead street, all the cars on it parked and sleeping. There are two men, arms linked, walking down the cross street away from them. One of them laughs. Harry wants to link his arms with Draco. He wants it so badly it's like a fist closing over his heart.
Friends with benefits, maybe?
Really? Draco asks. We're friends now.
Despite both of us striving valiantly against that outcome, I think that's what the casual observer might call it.
Is that what you'd call it?
Harry looks at him, decides it in that moment.
I would. I'd call us friends.
Draco doesn't turn his head, but he looks pleased.
with a lot of benefits.
With really spectacular benefits, Harry agrees.
Spectacular, eh?
Harry lets it live, doesn't take it back. You hungry? He asks. I have pie.
Chapter 5. The next Friday, while Harry's sweeping up quality Quidditch, the bell over the door gives a jingle, and Harry turns to see Draco walk in.
Hi, he says, after a moment of stunned silence. Hello, Draco says, looking around the shop and then giving Harry a fragile-looking smile.
Harry returns it.
What are you doing here?
Draco starts, swallows, looks around another moment, and then grabs the product nearest him on a display.
I need broom cleaner.
Oh, well, sure, but, He leans his broom against the counter and joins Draco at the shiny shelf of oils and soaps.
You have to use a lot of this one, so it's not actually less expensive than the good stuff. I'd recommend this combo pack of Gwenog's Premium Cleaner plus Polish. It'll last you forever, and I don't think anything does a better job.
Oh, Draco says. Yes, thanks. It's weird, him being at Harry's place of business. There's a removed quality to their interaction that feels bizarre now that they're seeing each other regularly, now that Harry's seen him naked, touched him, like Draco is somehow his to touch.
It's good to see you, Harry says, trying to ease past the wall of formality that now feels so foreign between them.
Draco smiles.
Yes, I needed broom cleaner.
He's blushing.
And I wanted to ask if you might be going to the Dove tonight.
Oh, Harry brightens. Well, I hadn't thought about it.
Lies, pure lies. Do you think you'll be there?
I asked you first. Draco smirks at him, his hair falling over his shoulder. He looks so pretty. Harry wants to sink his hands into his hair and kiss him right here.
I'll be there if you are.
Draco takes a deep breath, exhaling audibly.
Good. All right. I guess I'll see you then, Harry.
He starts toward the door.
What about...
When Draco turns, eyebrows raised, it takes him a moment, and then he startles, looks at the product in his hand.
Right,
he laughs. They walk to the cash register, and Harry rings him up.
It's 8 galleons.
Draco digs in his pockets, finds 3 galleons in one, and places them on the counter. 2 galleons come from his other pocket, and then he's hunting for sickles.
Oh, wait, Harry says, smacking his forehead. I completely forgot that this line goes on sale today. I'd meant to reprice them when I first got in. The combo's actually 5 galleons. Limited time, he adds.
Draco looks slightly wary, but also relieved, maybe a touch ashamed through that. But he slides the 5 galleons across the counter, and Harry finishes ringing him, putting his purchase in a paper bag with handles and the company's QQ on both sides.
Listen, Harry says, and Draco meets his gaze. I haven't flown in forever. If you ever want to...
That fragile smile is back.
We'll see. It doesn't have to be Quidditch. Because you know I'd kick your ass.
Fuck off with that. You could never. And though Harry thinks he may have gone too far, Draco just smiles bigger, his eyes lighting up now.
See you tonight? Harry checks.
See you tonight, Draco answers, walking back through the shop and out the dingling door. Harry steps into the club, the driving bass quivering in pleasant shocks through his body. He spots Draco at the bar, sipping a shot and shout-talking to Sergio.
Hey, Harry says, coming up close.
Draco turns a dazzling smile on him.
You came?
Of course I did.
I wasn't sure if... I mean, not that I thought you... Fuck, I love it when you wear the bun.
Draco blinks, flushing under the pulsating lights.
Can I buy you another? Harry asks. Sure. Just one more, though. I don't want to... I want to be here,
he settles on. Harry nods.
I want to be here, too.
Harry takes the ice-cold shot of vodka and downs it, grimacing through the tight,
hard feeling in his chest. It slides into his stomach, rises into his head.
Come here.
He gives Draco a little tug, and Draco comes into his arms easily, their lips meeting, parting, Draco's breath sighing sweet into his mouth as they kiss. Harry makes it last, does it long enough and deep enough that Draco winds up whimpering into it.
I've wanted to do that for hours.
You just got here, Draco reminds him, a bit breathlessly.
From the moment you walked into the shop today.
Draco glitters, his lips soft and curved.
Dance with me.
They go at it hard as the music demands, arms raised, jumping until they can't breathe. There's a joyfulness to it, an abandon, and even though the lyrics are all about what's been lost and how fucked it all is, Draco is smiling at him, and Harry is smiling back. On slower songs where the beat turns sensual, they move into one another's space. The singer is of indeterminate gender, their eyes lined thick with black, voice gravelly as they make love to the mic and belt things about finding connection in the dark, about bodies being the only things that truly matter. Draco's hands rest on Harry's chest, Harry's on his hips. He's not sure how it happens, but they end up sort of staring into each other's eyes. Harry likes the smell of Draco's sweat. He gets a little lost in how Draco's hair curls in damp wisps about his face. Draco strokes his hand up, winds his arm around Harry's neck, and Harry pulls him closer, feels Draco's half-hard cock up against him now.
Fuck, he breathes into Draco's ear.
Want to get out of here? Draco murmurs.
Harry nods, tightens his hands on Draco's body, and apparates. Their clothes come off on the way from Harry's living room to the bedroom.
You want it rough, Potter?
Draco asks when Harry accidentally rips his shirt.
Sorry,
Draco laughs.
Fuck it. Rip it again.
The fabric rends in his hands.
God, yeah.
Draco breathes, shirt in shreds on the floor. He kisses Harry again, then he says,
That's two now. Shirts,
he adds, and Harry laughs. They tumble to the bed, legs tangled, and Harry pulls Draco on top of him. Draco straddles him, grinds their cocks together.
I want you to fuck me, Harry says.
Draco pauses over him.
Really?
Harry gulps, maintains his courage.
Yeah.
Draco starts moving again, planting his hands on the pillow on either side of Harry's head and rolling his hips.
I had sort of thought you might not ever want that.
And I'd be 95% fine with that. Or, rather, bloody hell, that's good.
Because Harry has taken him by the hips and is thrusting up a little now.
I'd be 100% fine with that, 95% of the time.
Harry stares up at him. Draco's beauty, a thing that could easily derail him from his topic. He'd be more than happy to suck him off.
Does that mean that only 5% of you might want to?
No, Harry,
Draco says, pressing their dicks together harder.
All of me wants to.
All of me wants you to, too.
They watch each other as they wordlessly get resituated, so Draco's between Harry's spreading legs.
I'm going to slick you up, Draco says,
and when Harry nods, Draco casts, and then he's warm and oily, and it tingles a little bit. Not from the oil, from Draco's magic. Then Draco's finger is slipping inside him, making him gasp.
You're tight, aren't you?
Draco says with awe in his voice.
How long has it been?
It's been never, Harry admits.
Draco stills, looks down at him.
Oh,
he says. There are flecks of almost pewter in his eyes that Harry's never noticed before, his expression shifting between his own desire and a tenderness Harry would never have expected from him. He moves his finger again, gently. He leaves a slow kiss on Harry's lips and then stays close to say,
I'm going to make you feel so good.
Harry holds his legs up, and Draco starts to dismantle him with just the one finger. Harry's moving on it, biting his lip. He wants to start touching his cock, but he knows he'd come. And then Draco says,
Easy.
He pulls a pillow under Harry's hips. He adds a second finger. Harry grabs for the headboard,
He's begun to sweat. Draco hums, finger-fucking him and dropping his face into Harry's armpit, nuzzling the hair there.
I want you to be ready. Are you ready?
Harry nods. I might come soon.
I want you to come on my cock,
Draco tells him. And then, as he slides it home inside Harry,
want you so much.
Harry loses his breath at the feel of it. The push, the fullness, the slight burn and ache that soon translate to a need in him, a desire for even more. And Draco's words, a vulnerability in this moment when Harry thought he'd be the one to feel exposed. All he feels is ready for this. So ready for it.
That's it,
Draco breathes when Harry relaxes and lets him in that last, perfect inch. Draco begins moving, his hips a sensuous roll, cock smoothly entering Harry and then dragging out, and every time it pulls out of him, it's like the most blindly torturous wonder, so good and so bad, like Harry will start to beg him for it, like Draco could set him on fire.
I want to kiss you with our eyes open, Draco says then.
Harry blinks up at him, at his mercy. He nods and Draco comes close. Draco thrusts into him, and when Harry gasps, Draco's tongue darts into his mouth. He gazes down at Harry, fucking him while they kiss. Harry begins to tremble. Draco's hand closes around his cock, and several long, stretched-out moments later, it happens, as if in slow motion. Draco keeps his pace maddeningly unrushed, his cock filling Harry and pulling out, his hand milking it from Harry's body, and Harry arches, giving a strangled shout as he spills over Draco's fist and onto his own stomach. Draco licks the corner of his mouth as Harry's panting breaths carry his name, and then Harry wilts, all shaken pleasure.
God, I need to fuck you, Draco says.
Still riding the waves of adrenaline, Harry nods.
Do it.
Draco braces himself, and he finally fucks Harry hard, hips a fluid whipping motion. The sensation in his arse hits somewhere near pain, but not quite, and it's bloody incredible. It makes him wish he could come twice. A beautiful frown passes over Draco's face. Then he's groaning, pounding it in, and Harry's saying, yes, 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 fuck me, Draco. God, yeah, baby, yes. He's delirious, and maybe Draco is too, because he lets Harry say it, fucks him through it, and then sags with relief, body heavier than it looks as he collapses on top of Harry. They stay in a heap, catching their breaths. Then Draco laughs a little bit, rises only enough to pull his dick out, and recollapses against Harry's side. Harry strokes over his body tiredly, and then, when he's so tired he feels he might fall asleep, he holds him instead.
We're definitely doing that again, Draco says.
Maybe more than 5% of the time.
Maybe so,
Draco laughs. Then he says,
you're so hot when you're apparating me somewhere to fuck.
Harry smiles. He reaches for the now loose bun, barely holding it together at the back of Draco's head. Carefully, he undoes it, flinging a hair elastic in the direction of his nightstand, and then sinking his fingers into the silk of Draco's hair. Draco hums appreciatively.
That first time, you apparated us, what was it, 3 times?
That sounds right.
God, I wanted you, even though I still hated you.
Harry can feel Draco's heart thudding against his own chest.
I want you, Draco says, quieter.
They've wanted each other for weeks that have now turned into months instead. Maybe it's the word he feels safest saying. Maybe he's trying to say something else. Harry's lassitude is tugging at him, closing his eyes, and yet there's an insistent need he's got to see before he passes out with Draco in his arms.
I have to piss, Harry tells him.
Draco grunts, hands grasping Harry close for a moment.
Fine, he says. Don't be long.
Harry rolls out from under him, leaving Draco sprawled there, naked and spent and sunk into the bed. He's got a terribly cute arse. He wonders if Draco would hex him for saying so. As he takes a piss,
Harry thinks about having someone who wants him, really wants him, who expects him to come back. It's a good enough feeling to be slightly scary. And when he returns, and Draco is already softly snoring, Harry crawls in next to him, curls up on his side facing him, pushes a wispy bit of hair off Draco's slack face, and he thinks, this is probably how it feels when you fall. They're having breakfast together in Harry's itty-bitty kitchen when the flue in the living room suddenly fires up and Hermione tumbles through.
What?
Harry almost chokes on his bacon, setting down a half-eaten strip as he pushes his chair back.
Are you okay?
He strides to her side as she stands up and brushes herself off. When she lifts her face, he sees that she's crying, thick tears trailing down her face in previous tears' tracks.
Oh, shit,
he says, looks back at Draco, still in the kitchen, and then guides her to the sofa.
Do you want to sit down?
I'm sorry,
she says, sitting. Then she looks up, sees Draco, and stands quickly.
Damn it, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have...
Of course you should have, Harry tells her.
He sends Draco a bit of a pleading look. Draco nods, standing and dabbing at his mouth with a napkin.
I need to get going. 1 minute,
Harry tells Hermione. She nods, sitting back down on his sofa, and Harry walks Draco to the front door.
Sorry about breakfast, he says,
as Draco turns on his doorstep, the sunny day shining down on him.
It's no problem.
They stand there for an awkward moment. If they were legitimately seeing each other, this would be a good time to set up a future date, or kiss each other. Something.
I hope she's okay, Draco says.
Thanks. Harry looks back at her, at Draco again.
I suppose I'd better... Right. So, bye then.
Draco starts to turn.
Draco? Hmm?
He turns back, eyebrows expectantly raised. Harry swallows.
Maybe I'll see you later.
He would kick himself. He really would. It's too wishy-washy. It's not what he wants to say. But then Draco is nodding, and he doesn't look displeased. And Harry wants to do something to make him remember last night, because Harry loved last night. He wants to hold on to it with both hands. Draco waves and then walks away, and before he can run after him like a complete knob, Harry turns and goes back inside. Hermione's head is in her hands, her hair in beautiful braids falling over her shoulders. He fetches her a box of tissues.
Should I make us some tea?
He asks. She sniffs, uses a tissue. She doesn't answer him about the tea. Instead, she looks up at him, pleading, terrified, and she says,
I fucked up, Harry.
Slowly, he sits down, joining her on the sofa. He takes her hands in his.
You are the very best person I know, he tells her. I think you fucking up is everyone else's normal.
She laughs a little, sniffs again, and then her face falls. Her whole being crumples, and she starts crying. She pulls her hands out of his and stands up, beginning to pace his living room. He's never seen her like this, and he tries not to be afraid of it. She's always been the one to calm him down, take his high emotions and tame them, hand them back to him in a reasonable, manageable, contained space. She takes care of him, and now she needs care, and Harry doesn't know where to begin. But then... She starts talking.
What if everything I've done is wrong? What if I've made every wrong choice? Harry,
she looks at her own trembling hands, then turns to him with her frightened eyes.
I want to work more, she says, not less. I need to work more. The 60 hours, I loved it. And Ron,
she begins pacing again.
He's not 14 anymore. He's an honest Merlin feminist. It's not that he thinks I'm the one that needs to be home more often. He thinks it should be equitable. But fuck, Harry, it isn't.
She stamps her foot and then keeps walking.
My job is more. It's important what I do, and I love it. I miss it when I'm not there. I miss my co-workers, the bustle of it, the stakes.
He thinks she's at the end and opens his mouth to say, what, he doesn't quite know. But then she blasts him with,
and Pansy Parkinson is so distractingly beautiful, and I don't know what that means.
Her face is anguished, but her voice is fierce.
I do know what it means, but I wouldn't cheat on my husband. I don't want to cheat on my husband, but we got married young. We're still young, and now we have a baby. And I love Rose, and I don't regret my child. I'm queer, she shouts, and Harry blinks. And I never got to explore that, or even be that. And now I don't want to say it. How can I say it? She turns back to him again, pleading once more. I love him. I'm stuck, Harry. I'm bloody stuck, and I feel like a horrible person for saying it. It's not you who needs help, Harry. It's me. It's me. It's me. It's me, damn it.
Whatever was holding her up and marching her around the room drains away, and she sits heavily on the living room rug, crying into her hands. Harry joins her, sitting close but not touching. He licks his lips, unsure what the right course is. He asks, "Does Ron know any of this?" She grabs the tissues from the coffee table and blows her nose, vanishing the used tissue after with a flick of her hand, her wandless exceptional, even under stress.
How do I tell him when I'm not even sure what I want to happen?
You're married. Isn't that something you could figure out together? She looks at him.
I don't want to burden him. He's got so much on his mind.
Not more than you, it sounds like.
Oh, Harry, she says, saddened. But he does.
She looks down, composes her thoughts, like she's trying to decide how much to tell him. She meets his gaze again.
Do you know why he acts like he does? Constantly on you about your life until you want to strangle him?
He gives a short laugh. I really don't.
It's Fred.
And this is the last thing he had expected her to say. What's Fred?
I think he thinks that if he controls everything he can, if he tries very, very hard, if he keeps it all together and somehow gets everyone else to do the same, he can keep the people he loves from dying.
The breath he takes in feels like poison infiltrating his lungs.
Oh, God, he says. He thinks that.
She shakes her head.
I don't think he knows what he's doing. I think it's all instinct. I think it's post-traumatic stress. He still has nightmares nearly every night, Harry.
I didn't, he starts. There's a knot in his throat, and it hurts. I didn't know. He's the world's worst friend. Here they've been, trying to help him, asking after him, wanting the best for him, and all he's done is resent it. He hasn't asked after them at all. Hermione, I'm so sorry. I didn't. And you're queer. Like
bisexual, maybe. Or pan. Or queer works.
She looks at him like she's worried about his response, and the fact that she doesn't know kills him. He scoots close, takes her in his arms, hard. I love you both so bloody much. Once her tears have slowed, and his own are no longer a hard, dull thing in his chest, he gets up and makes tea. They sit on the floor together, leaning their backs against his big, squishy chair, fragrant mugs of milky Earl Grey cupped in their palms.
Why does tea help so much? Hermione asks. It doesn't actually change anything, but I feel just a little bit better.
Dunno. It's soothing, I guess. It's like the world might be falling apart, but we can sit here and drink this warm beverage. She laughs, snot-clogged, and he summons the tissues over again.
I don't want to sleep with Parkinson.
He waits, because it certainly feels like there's more coming.
I think I wish I had, though. I think I might be jealous of you and Draco.
I think I've been envious of you and Ron. You're both so accomplished, so together.
Together like a house of cards.
Come on now, he says gently. You know you're better than that. He loves you, and you love him. She nods.
That's true. That hasn't changed. I don't want to leave him, Harry. That's not what I want.
Then maybe just try talking to him. She turns her head, seems to examine him for a moment.
Do you two talk? You and Draco?
He sighs, thinking about it. Sometimes, yeah. We haven't discussed the big stuff yet, the war, what we did, but I can tell he cares about the world now. He cares about the people in it. And somehow, he got there from nothing.
He took the shit he learned and managed to throw it out and start better, even though he's struggling.
She reaches out a knuckle and gently strokes his cheek with it.
You truly care about him.
He goes warm all over, sips his tea to stall the need for a response. But when he looks at her, the fear of it bleeds away, and he's left with something more like relief. He wants to say it.
I think I love him, Hermione.
She smiles.
Oh, Harry.
They finish their tea, and when Harry offers her a second cup, she declines, standing again.
Ron's got the baby, and miraculously we have a day off at the same time. I need to get home.
What will you do?
He asks. She shrugs.
I don't know.
She breathes out slowly through pursed lips.
It's a scary feeling for me, the not knowing.
He nods. He pulls her into a tight hug.
Thank you for telling me.
When they pull apart, he asks, Do you think,
I mean,
Ron, I didn't know he was hurting like that. Saying it hurts him, and he has to clear his throat. His eyes have gone damp again.
How do I help him, Hermione?
She takes his hand in hers.
Remember that he's your best friend, even when he's being a numbskull. Give him the benefit of the doubt, show him a little bit of patience, and then just tell him what you need from him, and he'll be there. All he wants is to be there for you, Harry.
A tear falls down his face, and he wipes at it, nods at her. She kisses his cheek, steps into the flue, and is gone. Chapter 6. During their next shift together, Chandra tells him about another protest for trans rights.
This one's a march, and it'll be even bigger than the last thing.
Her eyes sparkle with excitement.
Do you want a flyer?
Actually, he says, could I have 5?
He sends one to Ron and Hermione via Owl, and then drops by Belinda's with one for her, and one to put up in the pub itself.
Is he here?
Harry asks, already looking around for Draco.
I think he's got his other job today, she tells him. He might be busy until nightfall.
Is Carl busy?
She grins.
He told you about Carl?
Harry nods.
Come on, then,
she says, and leads him into the back to pet a giant snoozing dog who has draped himself over a dog bed as big as a triple-decker bus. 10 minutes of belly rubs later, Harry takes his leave, calling, Thanks, Belinda, on his way out the door.
Thanks for the info. We'll definitely be there, she replies.
He strongly suspects she knew about the event long before he did, but she's humoring him.
He doesn't care. He feels light. He feels energized.
He apparates to Draco Street just after sundown. Receiving no answer to his knock on the door, Harry sits himself on the curb to wait. Summer has successfully overtaken spring, and it's a warm evening, the breeze only slightly cooler than the air, which still feels sort of baked from the sun. He's been there long enough for his arse to start going numb when he spots Draco turning the corner at the end of the street, his hair blowing back from his face, a lit cigarette dangling from his hand. Harry sees the exact moment Draco notices him, because his steps falter, and he stops for a second before approaching. Harry gets up, resisting the urge to close the distance. Draco draws from the cigarette, and once he's in earshot, says,
Would you believe me if I told you I was trying to quit?
It can't be an easy thing. Draco takes one more drag and then drops the cigarette in the street and stomps it out.
What are you doing here?
Someday, maybe Draco will understand that he has zero ulterior motives.
Wanted to see you, Harry says, for what feels like the 1,000th time.
It's fine. He's getting used to saying it. He'll keep saying it, as long as Draco needs to hear it.
Would it be okay if I came in?
Draco frowns, hesitating.
Or I could take you to dinner, if you'd rather.
You can come in.
His frown hasn't disappeared, but he leads Harry up the rickety steps, warning him,
Skip over that middle one.
And so Harry does. He follows in Draco's footsteps like they're navigating a minefield. Draco unlocks his door and pushes it in, and once inside, Harry sees that he's used wizarding space. Not a lot, but the interior is relatively twice the size of what it looks to be outside.
It's nice enough. Not fancy by any means, but not dingy.
It must be a significant amount of magical labor to keep it that way. It's a muggle neighborhood, which explains why he hasn't really touched the outside, but Harry is glad he's not living in actual squalor.
It's nice, Harry says brightly.
Draco looks at him and rolls his eyes. Would you like a drink, Harry?
What do you have?
Well, Draco says, a benefit in working for B is that one of the few things I own is a terrifically stocked bar. He leads Harry into a small living room with chairs that look like they came from different pureblood addicts, posh but not at all alike, lending the room a roguish 18th-century brothel vibe, nearly ruined by the monstrosity of a beige sofa, though it's comfortable enough when Harry sits on it.
Surprise me, he says.
Draco busies himself at an impressive drinks cabinet that sits over by a little window with gingham curtains. Harry never would have thought Draco to be the gingham curtain type.
You're thinking about the hideous curtains, aren't you? Draco asks without turning toward him.
How? Harry laughs and then clears his throat.
Don't worry. I do know how awful they are. They were a gift from Greg's. He has no taste whatsoever, but it makes him happy to see them up.
Does he visit often?
Not since he and his wife had twins.
He turns now.
Here, try this.
He hands Harry a pretty drink, the color of a brilliant sunset, in a tall cylindrical glass, an orange garnish on the lip. Harry sips it.
Fuck, that's good. It's a Sex on the Beach.
Harry laughs a little.
How saucy of it.
Draco snorts, brings his own over, and as he sits on the sofa, half-facing Harry, he clinks their glasses together.
To bad curtains and good company.
Harry's belly goes warm, and they sip. Then Draco says, Now tell me what you're doing here, and don't. He speaks over Harry's objections.
Tell me it's because you wanted to see me.
Why here, Harry? He has no idea what to say, and what comes out after a faltering moment of vague, frustrated noises is,
Curiosity?
Draco's gaze goes half flat, and Harry hurries to say, Not how it came out sounding. I'm curious. About you, Draco. Draco looks like he's considering this, the nuances of it. He sips his drink, and Harry decides that's a very good idea and follows suit.
What do you want to know? Draco asks him.
Well, I hadn't imagined it would resemble an interrogation. He flails a bit. Have a list of questions handy. Draco's lips twitch.
Let's just drink, then. You're here. I'm here. I suppose it doesn't have to be more complicated than that.
Harry takes a long, cool gulp and asks,
What did you do today? Let's see. Well, I repaired a cabinet full of broken china for a witch whose grandchild thought it would be a fine idea to fly their broom in the house.
Yikes.
Yes, that took a couple of hours. Then I walked Mr. Crestwood's 5 crops for him.
Harry's heart does a little flip at that. He rests his cheek against the back of the sofa.
Go on. Then I tried and failed to fix a broken pipe. Had to call in magical accidents and catastrophes.
At least you tried. Draco shrugs. He sips his drink, and Harry watches his lips, then his throat as he swallows. Harry takes a healthy swig, shores up his courage, and then broaches a topic that's been bothering him for a while.
There was a night, a few weeks back, when you seemed frightened to go home. Are you scared here?
And we're sure this isn't an interrogation, Draco checks dryly. Harry shakes his head.
I'm sorry, that was too...
I used to be. Draco looks at him, blinks once. I used to try to sleep on friends' sofas, or... He stops and looks down, then meets Harry's gaze again.
I've become used to it. It's hard finding places that will rent to someone like me in the magical community.
He shrugs and says again,
I'm used to it.
What were you afraid of then, if you don't mind me asking? Draco looks at him for a long time, then his gaze moves from Harry's, something in him faltering.
Trust you to notice that, even then.
He gives a short, caustic laugh, but it's soft. There's nothing of the vitriol he'd subjected Harry to after their first night together. And what's revealed now in its place is a sweetness,
a vulnerable quality that Harry feels sure he didn't let very many people see. When Draco meets his eyes again, he's open, any former veneer pulled completely back.
"I was afraid of not getting to go home with you. Not because of the place, or not only," he swallows, "but because you were the first really good thing to happen to me in a very, very long time."
Harry blinks, his lips part. Draco shrugs, and "I really did try not to like you" gesture. Unable to read a room, Harry's stomach decides this is the best time to growl loudly. Draco raises his eyebrow.
"I might be a bit hungry," Harry says.
"Oh, might you be?" Harry likes the steady, bright smile on Draco's face. He likes it so much. He suggests takeaway, and Draco tells him about a pub with excellent fish and chips within walking distance.
"I know how much you love to walk."
Harry smiles.
"Let's go."
They've traveled two streets in the sort of comfortable silence he'd never have expected to be able to share with Draco Malfoy, when Harry wonders aloud, "Do you like fixing things?" Draco puts his hands in his jeans pockets and shrugs.
"I think I'm good at it."
"But do you like it?" He thinks about it for a moment.
"Yeah," he says, "I do. Turns out I quite enjoy using my hands. And my wand, of course. But a lot of fixing is handling things, and also thinking about what might be wrong, figuring it out. You know, Quality Quidditch might be looking to add broom repair services. I could talk to the management, if that might be something you'd like."
They've arrived at the pub, which saves Draco from having to answer, and Harry hopes he hasn't put him on the spot. He also realizes he's just suggested they work together, which may not be something Draco wants, and might be deeply uncomfortable, particularly if this thing between them ever starts to go south. It certainly hasn't yet. It feels like it may just not, which is startling, heady, amazing. They get their fish and chips, and Harry puts a stasis on the bag for the walk home. They could have simply eaten at the pub, but Harry enjoys his walks with Draco, and Draco doesn't seem to mind. So they start the trek back to Draco's house, the night air alive with a sweet breeze, the sounds of insects from a park across the way.
"I think it might be difficult," Draco starts, "being around brooms but not flying."
He looks at Harry as they stroll.
"I would think it would be difficult for you."
Harry's not sure how to answer, or if what Draco said even requires a reply.
"I think I just wanted to stop everything."
It's not what he'd expected to say. It's an unexplored thought, dangerous to set loose without examination. And yet, Draco stays quiet, waiting to hear what Harry means, and it feels somehow safer with him. What a barmy thing that Draco is the one to make him feel safe, finally. "It didn't matter that I still loved to fly. Everybody was watching to see what I'd do next. It made me want to hide, want to do nothing, to just be by myself and float or something." The expression on Draco's face is gentle, maybe knowing. He says,
"You're so beautiful on a broom."
And Harry barely suppresses a gasp, but Draco goes on.
"Part of me wants to call it a shame. You on the ground. You not doing the next extraordinary thing."
He smiles at Harry.
"But it's not, really. If anybody deserves time to float, Harry, it's you."
"Are you angling to get your dick sucked?" Harry asks with a wry smile, which Draco returns. Draco waggles his eyebrows and Harry laughs. Then he looks around them, takes Draco's hand. "In here," he says, nodding at the smoky shadows between two closed storefronts. Draco blinks at him in disbelief, but he allows himself to be pulled, and once Harry has him off the street, he cups his crotch, giving Draco's cock an encouraging massage.
"Jesus fucking Christ,"
Draco sighs. Harry smiles at him and sinks to his knees. Back in Draco's living room, their dinner demolished and two pints of beer each drained, Harry groans.
"Merlin, that was good."
"Which part?"
Harry looks at him from across their improvised picnic blanket on the floor and says, "All of it." Draco blushes, the same sexy pink he'd turned with his cock in Harry's mouth. When he tries to clean up their dinner mess, Harry says, "Let me," and pulls his wand. A few flicks later, it's just the two of them on a clean, soft blanket. Draco drags two bulbous pillows off his equally bulbous sofa, and, wordlessly, they come to lie side by side, Draco's lumos waning just enough in the corner to make the room soft and glowy. Harry turns on his side, lays his hand over Draco's middle, bunching his t-shirt between his fingers. "Mmm," Draco hums, his eyes closed. Harry slips his hand under the cotton. Draco's lips part. Harry finds a nipple and touches it. Draco gasps. He turns his head, looks at Harry, and when Harry pinches softly, repeatedly, Draco gasps again. Harry pushes the shirt up, moves to apply his mouth, and gets a gorgeous strangled sound. "You like that?" Harry asks, flicking the hard nub with his tongue and then sucking on it. Draco arches helplessly toward his mouth. "Fuck, you like that." And Harry feels invincible, that when he reaches into Draco's pants, it's to find him rock hard again. Harry might be addicted. This might be a new obsession coming on. He strips the t-shirt completely off, disheveling Draco's hair in the process. He ducks his head back down and sucks on one nipple, then the other. He tugs on Draco's cock, and Draco clutches at the pillow under his head, panting now, thrusting into it. "Harry, fuck, I'm..." He gets out, and then he's coming. Harry flicks at his tits with the point of his tongue, hand quick and tight between his legs. "Oh my God, oh my God." Draco pants, finishing. Harry's hand slows, strokes. He cups Draco's balls and rolls them gently. "Twice in an hour," Draco says, still out of breath. "Careful, Potter. I might fall in love with you." After he's said it, he tenses. He seems on the verge of pulling away. Harry doesn't let him. He draws Draco into his arms, kisses his lips. "Go on, then," he says, knowing he's already there. "What's this?" Draco asks the next morning, unfolding the flyer that fell out of Harry's back jeans pocket the night before. Harry had forgotten that part of his objective in finding Draco last night. "I thought you might be interested in going," he adds. "With me." Harry sips his tea, his beans on toast already reduced to a few crumbs on his plate. Draco reads the flyer, frowning a little. He nods.
I'm not really that much of a do-gooder."
"Yes, you are," Harry blurts, and Draco looks at him. "I mean, you walked an old man's crops."
"I got paid for that."
"So?"
Draco reads the flyer again. "This is a good thing."
"I know."
"Have you done something like this before?"
"A protest?" Harry asks. He shakes his head. "Not unless Dumbledore's army could be considered a protest."
"I think it was," Draco says,
and their gazes meet, the two of them momentarily sharing that painful past, a past made more painful by Draco himself. "And it's all right. It feels survivable. Like something they've already, mostly, survived."
"I want..." Harry starts.
"Yes?"
"I want to go with you."
Draco frowns a little, his gaze dropping to the leaves swimming around in the bottom of his teacup. He stands, brushing his hands down the shiny track shorts that he slept in. His chest is distractingly bare, and for the first time, Harry notices the faint lines, only two of them, the rest healed. They cross the left side of his belly. X marks the spot. He wears one of Harry's worst moments on his body. Draco doesn't seem to register Harry's turbulent thoughts, caught up in his own. He pads back over to the blanket they slept on. He sits, drawing a fat pillow into his lap and hugging it.
"Do you not want to go?" Harry asks. "I'm afraid to go. There's a difference."
Harry plops down next to him, grabs his own emotional support pillow.
"Would it help to know that I'm fucking terrified?"
Draco startles, looks at him. Harry nods.
I couldn't tell you why, I just am. It feels like there are a million reasons, and he could choke on them. A million reasons, and none at all. Maybe he's just afraid to stop floating. It feels huge. It is huge. It's been a long time since I've done anything important that, I don't know, requires something of me. Draco nods, thinks. Then he says, "You don't have to arrive on the scene and be your hero self, though. Maybe it's enough to simply show up. As you are. As we are." That would be something, wouldn't it? Not all. Not nothing. A start. Harry's pulse pounds under his wrists, at his throat. Draco had said, "We." Draco scoots closer. "I have an idea," he says. Harry turns his head so they're looking at one another, close. "Yeah?" "It might be a bad one." "I'm fielding bad ideas at this time," Harry tells him. "Well," Draco starts, nudging Harry's shoulder with his own. Their feet touch, and Harry hooks their ankles together, crossing his other leg to toss it over Draco's as well, pretzel-like, comfortable. "What if we could do it selfishly?" He swallows, maybe nervous, maybe excited, maybe both. "What if we did a good thing, to make ourselves feel good? Would that be wrong, Harry?" He's really asking. He doesn't want to do something wrong. And Harry loves him. "I love you," he says. Draco inhales softly, his eyes going a bit wide. Harry rubs his socked foot up and down Draco's calf and says it again. Relief, a madness, his own resolute joy overtaking him. "I love you." Draco gapes. That's a no, by the way, to it being wrong. And it's also a yes. "I'll be a selfishly happy do-gooder with you, Draco." How about you just kiss me instead of trying to speak?" Draco grabs him hard, all tangled up with him, and does. The day dawns bright and hard, the sun streaking quickly toward a blinding zenith. It's the kind of day that makes you want to stretch your arms, to take up space, to shout. It's a good day for shouting. When he and Draco arrive, there's already a rippling crowd. Chandra's friends have organized the event well, and there's a sonorous coordinator calling out to them as volunteers walk amongst everyone, making sure they know the route, have water, etc. There are queers everywhere, and it's exhilarating. "Are you sure I've spelled transphobia right?" Draco asks. Harry turns the sign more toward himself, and though he's checked it 10 times, he does it an 11th. "Fuck your TRANSPHOBIA. Yep, you're good." Draco's sweating a little, and Harry's not sure if it's the heat coming off the asphalt and bearing down on their heads, or if it's nerves. He takes Draco's hand and squeezes it, and Draco turns a worried smile his way. "You look fucking fit when you're marching for trans rights," Harry tells him, and watches the smile broaden, his shoulders relaxing. Draco wore the high bun. Not for Harry, presumably, but maybe a little bit for Harry. They'd fucked in the shower, Harry taking out his own nervous energy on Draco's body, hard from behind. And then Harry had been treated to an unimpeded view of Draco's beauty process, which took an enviably short amount of time and products. He'd let his hair air dry while he dressed, and then run a brush through it a few times, pulling it up, twisting it around, then piercing his wand through it, while casting a sticking charm at the same time. They might have been late, had Harry let his instincts to then ruin him completely take control. He'd settled for a long, deep kiss, Draco pliant and lovely in his arms. Now, here they are, and there's a veritable sea of blue, pink, white, pink, and blue. Trans women, trans men, non-binary folks, the spectrum of gender like a map of galaxies before them, filling the street to overflowing. It's one of the most beautiful and affecting things Harry has ever seen. "Dee Dee!" someone calls, and Harry turns to see Belinda waving, Giordano following in her wake. "Dee Dee?" Harry asks Draco, who rolls his eyes and says vehemently, "Never, Potter, if you know what's good for you."
Belinda and Draco air kiss while Giordano and Harry shake hands.
No call today? Harry asks. He might have already started scouring bulletin boards for adoptable strays.
Oh, please, Belinda says. That dog is much too lazy for this kind of walk.
Harry! Harry! Chandra comes squeezing through the crowd toward them. I'm so glad you could make it!
She turns her bright smile on Draco.
Hi!
Oh, Chandra, this is Draco, my... Harry stalls, all the air in the immediate vicinity seeming to have been sucked into some kind of vacuum.
Hello, Draco says, shaking her hand.
Love your sign, she exclaims, and then turns to greet the others.
I'm sorry, Harry says, heart a fluttering, confused mess.
But Draco gives him a look that is both arch and impossibly affectionate.
I'll be your...
He trails off in gentle mockery.
Whatever it was that sent you into a stupor of abject terror, Harry.
You will? Draco nods.
I wouldn't face my own sizable fear of showing my face at a trans Wicks rights march for just anyone, you know.
Are you here for me? Harry asks. Draco looks at him, into him, his eyes the softest, brightest gray.
I'm here because of you.
Just then, the person with the sonorous gets sonorousier, and the crowd begins milling with an earnestness that precedes actual marching.
Here we go, Harry says, and he, Draco, Belinda, and Giordano form a line, behind which Chandra and her friends join,
hundreds of others surrounding them. It's hard to see, hard to conceptualize. Harry leans over to ask Belinda how many she thinks have come out for this, the droves of them all. Families and couples and groups, their faces painted, little flags and big flags waving, their shouts and cheers adding to the propulsion of the march. When Harry hears one voice threading through the others with his name.
Harry!
He hears and tries to follow the sound.
Harry!
He squints, lifts his glasses up, which only makes the crowd blurrier. But then he sees her. Sees them. Hermione is waving one arm high above her head. Ron's waving both of his. They're smiling at him, beaming, even. He lifts his hand to wave, too, a choked sound coming out of him, and then they're breaking through the other marchers to get to him.
You came,
Harry exclaims, taking Hermione into his arms and lifting her, twirling her, setting her down to see Ron's face, the huge smile there, and yet also something like fear or uncertainty. Harry throws his arms around his friend and hugs him tight. Ron's arms wrap around Harry, too.
Hello, mate. The baby's with Bill and Fleur, Hermione explains. They knew how important it was to us to be here.
Harry looks at his two friends.
I'm so bloody happy right now.
Hermione's eyes are glistening and damp through her own joy. Then she turns to the man standing quietly next to Harry.
Draco,
she says with a nod. Ron nods at Draco as well, and Draco nods back. It's a lot of civil nodding, to be sure. Ron clears his throat.
Good sign, he says. Thank you,
Draco replies.
Ginny's sorry she couldn't be here, Ron tells Harry. If it weren't for the final match of the season and all.
Of course, Harry says, and can't help but be touched that Ron chose to be here instead of cheering on his sister. But Harry knows what Ginny would say to that. That she doesn't need the cheering section to beat the other team's arses. Draco steps in and executes some quick introductions between Ron and Hermione and Belinda and Giordano, who has said all of two words the entire time, one of which was actually just an affirmative grunt. Belinda must like the strong, silent type.
Belinda,
Hermione says, the dawning of recognition on her face. They shake.
So good to see you.
Belinda?
Ron asks.
Then, oh, you're...
And Hermione stamps on his foot.
Fuck! I mean, it's good to meet you.
Belinda smiles, shakes Ron's hand.
It is, she says. It's good to meet you as well.
Ron looks relieved, or scared, or a little sick, but in a happy way. Harry pats him on the back.
Well done. Oh, sod off. I very nearly made a fool of myself at my first pride parade.
It's not a parade, it's a march,
Hermione tells him, as she takes her husband's hand in her own. Their fingers interlacing.
But we can be proud, right?
Ron checks.
I mean, I'm proud of you.
Hermione's reprimand is tender.
loving.
But the march isn't about me, dear.
I'm guessing plenty of trans people are queer too, though, right?
She told him, Harry realizes. Harry tries to conceal his happy gasp, though he doubts anyone would have been able to hear it over the noise of the crowd anyway. He watches them together. Ron's devotion to her. Her adoration of him. And Harry knows enough to understand that things aren't magically fixed between them, between any of them. But maybe they're at a new starting place, a fork in the road, and them deciding to tromp straight through the field instead. I'm sure some are, yes, she replies.
Well, I'm proud of everyone, Ron declares, throwing up his hands. That's all right, right?
Yes, love, she says, pulling him closer. That's more than all right.
Oi! Comes from behind him, and they turn to see Seamus dragging Dean along, the two of them in matching Trans Live Matters shirt and gay rainbow tiaras. With them are Luna and Neville, and then Pansy Parkinson trotting along behind them in terribly tall platform shoes and a very short skirt. Harry looks at Hermione, and she meets his gaze briefly, something complicated flitting over her face at Parkinson's arrival.
Hello, darling, Pansy is saying to Draco as they kiss cheeks three times.
We made copies of your flyer to put up at work, Seamus says, and Harry only now remembers why this motley bunch might have come together, seeing that they all work at the ministry.
Loads of us wanted to come, Seamus tells them.
The higher-ups kept pulling the flyers down, Pansy says, and continues with a wink. And we just kept putting up more, didn't we, Finnegan? I added butterfly stickers, Luna says pleasantly. And Neville gives her a look like it's the best thing anyone's ever done for trans rights, which pretty much verifies they're dating.
Great sign, Dean tells Draco, and then pats him on the back.
Draco looks at Harry, and Harry slips his arm around Draco's waist, pulling him up against his side with a proud smile. And then the woman with the sonorous calls out,
Are we ready to march for transgender rights?
The crowd roars.
For intersex and non-binary rights.
Another roar.
For drag queens and kings,
she yells, and the crowd erupts. Harry lets go of Draco to cup his hands around his mouth and shut.
Are we ready to march for our rights?
She shouts louder. Once again, they roar. Harry glances at Draco, his shining face as he pumps his sign up and down. Harry looks at Hermione. She smiles at him. Something shared between only the two of them, and she gives him a little nod.
I'm okay.
He nods back.
I'm okay too.
He's okay, and he's more than okay. He's both okay and brilliant. Two things he hasn't been in a long time. Maybe not ever. Not all at once, anyway. Harry takes Draco's hand and grips it.
Whose rights?
Trans rights!
Whose rights?
Our rights.
Whose rights?
Trans rights.
Whose rights?
Our rights.
The crowd surges forward, a steady, inexorable wave. He and Draco look at one another. Harry raises their clenched hands high over their heads. Together, all of them together, they stride out into the street. The end.